Ladies and gentlemen, I now call to order the regular meeting of February 2nd, 2022 of the Clue Valley County Board of Supervisors. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Do we have an adoption of the agenda? No changes? Holy cow, mark that on the calendar. Do we have an adoption of the agenda and motion so? Okay, do I have a second? All right, motion's made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0 with Ms. Booker being absent tonight. And please keep Ms. Booker in your thoughts and prayers. I believe it was her aunt?
Her uncle. Brother-in-law.
Okay. Also, before we go any further, folks, please remember the family of Bridgewater College. That's my alma mater. They had a tragedy up there yesterday. And please remember John Painter and J.J. Jefferson, yeah. Two guys that did their job, gave their lives to keep those children safe. So, Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, got a few things to report here for you today. The Clue Valley County Community Senior Center's Senior Valentine's Day dance will be February 16th from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Be at the Carriage Brook Gym. Must RSVP by February 2nd. And again, you can call the Parks and Rec office at 434-842-3150 or email faithstewart@fluvannacounty.org. So a Fluvanna 4-H member receives their Virginia 4-H Youth in Action Award. So on January 20th, Fluvanna 4-H member Braden Jones received the Virginia 4-H Youth in Action Award. Braden is a horsing around 4-H club member and is also a Virginia 4-H horse ambassador, and that credits his 4-H involvement in helping him overcome personal challenges. He's been in 4-H for 6 years, and a little testimonial from him that says, given all that I've had to overcome with my own disabilities, it's important to me to help others with disabilities. I want to inspire them to join 4-H, empower them to not be held back by their own challenges, and you can read an article more about Mr. Jones as well as the three other winners there at the link below when this goes out. Also, the Fluvanna County Department of Social Services had another successful Christmas sponsor program this year. So 132 children and 23 seniors were matched with sponsors. There were 35 gift sponsors and 5 food sponsors, totaling 20 food baskets. And also a big thanks to the sponsors and Jane Wilson, who does a phenomenal job every year coordinating all this for the seniors and children for this program. Now that all the tax documents are coming out, it'll be, before you know it, tax filing deadline. So the AARP Foundation Tax Aid Program in Central Virginia will open up its Fluvanna County Library public site for appointment only beginning February 5th. They're not doing walk-in. Again, you gotta make reservations. The site will be open Mondays and Saturdays from 9 to 1 p.m. Again, appointments are needed, and you can make those appointments by calling 434-214-0572. And if you no one answers, you can leave a message and they'll get back to you. Valentine's Day is coming up, and there's a way for you to share with loved ones that are far away from their loved ones. So again, another great thing teaming up with the library. So Blue Star Families of Central Virginia and Z95 is partnering with the Fluvanna County Library to collect handmade Valentines to send to military members serving overseas. All cards are due to the library by Friday, February 11th. Cards can be dropped off during regular library hours in the Valentine box by the front desk. Cards, as well as any care packages, will go to service members that have a connection in the area. Any cards, notes, drawings, words of encouragement, or anything are certainly appreciated. And then we got some business openings coming up here. So we had a ribbon cutting was held Saturday, January 22nd, celebrating their expansion into a storefront at 68 Heritage Drive. So a devoted hair salon has four new employees, and they've expanded services. Expanded services now include spa treatments, and that's right there by Papa John's, right at the center there by Papa John's. We also have two ribbon cuttings for two new small businesses coming up this weekend too. So for ribbon cutting Saturday, February 3rd, Lake Lady Therapeutics, there's a ribbon cutting at 10 a.m. and that's at 6440 Thomas Jefferson Parkway. It's basically the blue building there right behind Mulch Monkeys. I think we're at Deborah Curry's offices. So again, there'll be a ribbon cutting there at 10 a.m. For that business. And then on the same day at 11:30 a.m., DeMary's Store and Deli in the old Wahoo Barbecue location. DeMary's Store and Deli, they're going to be opening up for breakfast and lunch.
Cunningham Market.
Yep, at the old Cunningham Market, correct. Yep, that ribbon cutting is going to be at 11:30 a.m. And again, that's at 3417 Thomas Jefferson Parkway. So any board members that want to come out for those ribbon cuttings, and I think they'll be having some good food there too afterwards. So like I said, just a good way to support some local businesses and a good way for, you know, businesses even kind of in the current environment to kind of open up and you know, start something new in our community.
I think there's a typo in there. Saturday is the 5th.
It is the 5th.
My wife's birthday.
It is, yes.
Yeah, because tomorrow's the 3rd.
Correct. Saturday, February 5th, this Saturday, not the 3rd. And some upcoming meetings. So February 9th, we have a budget work session, and that'll be constitutional officer budget briefs. Again, here at the Performing Arts Center. Wednesday, February 16th at 5 p.m., we will have a 5 p.m. work session where the Fluvanna County Public Schools will present their FY23 adopted budget to the board. And then after that, at 7 p.m., we'll have a regular meeting.
And remember on the night that I'll be on a ship. So,
yep.
But if I can zoom in, I will.
Yeah, you should be able to zoom in and take part in the meeting.
Okay.
Yep. Any questions from the board?
No, thank you so much, sir. I do appreciate it. Having done the county administrator's report, I will now open up the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address this board, please keep your comments on topic and directed to the board. Please also state your name and address. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time that is present? Seeing no one standing up, is there anyone online, Ms. Harris?
No, sir.
All right, I will now close the first round of public comment. One thing I forgot to say, and I will bring this up, if there's anyone listening that's a longtime member of the Historical Society, my mom's two sisters were big members in the Historical Society, and her oldest sister passed away at 98 plus. She just missed 100. And the day before, she was able to play dominoes with Miss Sophie Pryor. So if any of y'all that are members of the Historical Society are listening, I know she was a longtime member and contributor at the Historical Society. Just wanted to let y'all know that the visitation will be Friday at the funeral. All right, sorry. There are no public hearings. Next, we'll move forward with action matters.
And just a correction.
Well, public hearing will be at 7 o'clock. Action matters. A, polling place, location, direction, and authorization to advertise a public hearing. Ms. Harris. Man, Ms. Harris, you get to be a star again.
Nah.
We're going to go back to redistricting just
nope.
To make you happy.
Nope. Did you not mention that?
Yes, ma'am. Got 10-year reprieve, or 9-year reprieve.
It's going to take me that long to recover. Good evening, members of the board. I am Kelly Harris, Assistant County Administrator. I'm trying to be better at that.
Yes, ma'am.
No, this is not the one I'm doing. this is one of those odds and ends that we need to come back to after redistricting. So as you might remember, the board did adopt the redistricting ordinance on December 15th. Those changes will become effective once we have received the certification of no objection from the Attorney General's office. And I think I can say we have no idea when that might be coming. However, they did confirm receipt of that submission on January 6th, so we know that they got it. With that change to the redistricting maps, the Palmyra voting location is no longer in the Palmyra district, so we need to choose a new one. And that was included in that redistricting ordinance that it was to be determined at a later date. So we started looking around and sort of looked at the Palmyra district and said, well, where the heck can we meet for a polling place? We had two. There are actually two. You have choices.
And we did think about that before all this happened, too.
So Beaver Dam Baptist Church and the Three Chop Community Center are both, we've spoken with representatives from both who have both given the thumbs up that either would be appropriate and manageable. If staff has any leaning at all, it would be for Beaver Dam Baptist Church. There's a little bit better parking.
More lighting.
Maybe a little bit more modern. Nothing against Three Chopped. I went to many a church event at Three Chopped as a child. So I've included the redistricting map. This is what was approved or adopted on December 15th. We cleaned it up a little bit to make the borders just a little bit more obvious. So on this, you can see red is Beaver Dam Baptist, the blue star is Three Chopped, and the black star is the former polling place at the Palmyra Firehouse. And there's not a whole lot more to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I'll agree with you in ditto. You're going to have better lighting. You got way more parking and better walking.
Yeah. Yes, you fully paved parking lot.
Fully paved parking lot versus gravel.
Yeah, we spoke to Tom Payne, who was kind of acting as a representative. He brought it back to the a committee there at Beaver Dam, and basically they gave their go ahead that we could use that facility. So again, both locations have
and the registrar as well.
Yes.
Knows of this location and has agreed that there's no obstacles to that.
My only thought would be that might be a place where we have somebody there in case of traffic, because it's on to 250. Mm-hmm. Comes on to 250.
Yeah, and usually I don't know if Sheriff Heskin.
We don't usually have people helping with
traffic. They have asked us before, we help them out.
No, they have. Okay, that's the only thing I'm thinking about there. Coming to that long straight stretch, cars might be rolling. That might not be a bad thing to have officer present.
I agree with you on all those parking lot lighting, the access.
I just remember the first time I ran, that was the scariest I've been in a long time. An elderly couple pulled out of Kent's door and the tractor trailer brawls on them. It just happened to catch the bumper. Didn't hit the frame of the car. 6 inches more this way and it had been not good.
So really, at this point, I mean,
go right ahead if you want to. There isn't much else to talk about. Those are the two options. We looked and looked all throughout that district, and we just couldn't. I mean, I was trying to find a church smack in the middle, but it didn't happen. So tonight I'm asking for authorization to hold a public hearing. It will be off of our normal public hearing schedule just based on timing. So it would be March 2nd that we would request to hold that public hearing, and we would advertise on the 10th and the 17th in the Fluvanna Review. Some of that timing is the registrar has a requirement of getting in all of the changes that were made because of redistricting into the state database by March 21st, and was going to feel a little bit of a pinch if we pushed it to the second meeting in March.
Instead of going to third meeting, let's just so do we need a motion? I'm sorry. Are you done, Ms. Harris?
I am indeed done.
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize county staff to advertise public hearing as required by Virginia Code 24.2-306 to consider an ordinance designating Beaver Dam Baptist Church as the polling place for the Palmyra District 101 voting precinct.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1.
I got a quick question.
Yeah.
Obviously, this district no longer has anything to do with Tom. And just like Cunningham is no longer in the Cunningham district and so on. And it just seems to me that if we're trying to make things easier for people to vote, and you have somebody who lives here in Flagana County for the first time, they are going nowhere near Palmyra now. It just seems to me at some point somebody ought to be thinking about either renaming them to whatever district, the Beaver Dam district or whatever, or it occurs to me like...
you could do numbers too.
But that's what I was going to say. When we do advertising at NFS, we've been in business for X amount of years. We don't ever say we've been in business how many years. We say since so-and-so year. Because thing that moves and then your media is bad. And I like district numbers or then it's never...
Yeah, Mr. Payne, you want to chime in on this? Is there anything particular we'd have to do if we wanted to just go away from physical, you know, names to just...
Well, we'd have to amend the ordinance, and we'd have to get that approved by the Attorney General. I wouldn't recommend doing that for... Yeah, I'll care with you. Do it eventually, but I wouldn't do it right now because we've got too much going on.
It can be done anytime, but like any time of year?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
Nelson County, I think, has northeast, south, and west. Hmm. Because, you know, you got a lot of flexibility in what you can do with it. But I think, you know, we got so much going on with getting it approved and having our, getting that amendment for the central absentee ballot precinct and all that kind of stuff is going on now. I just seem not complicated.
So when should we, would you suggest it? So we can put it on a schedule then?
Well, I would definitely wait till after budget time, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I think Bill probably has to see his wife in a couple of weeks.
She's okay with that.
Well, that's another question. All
right. But we don't have any elections this year.
There will be. I believe there will be a primary. In June or August. I think I heard that it might be moved to August, and then there'll be an election in November.
I mean, more local, but I guess it still would be affected, right? In other words, you want to do it before the
almost like after the next election cycle, right, for our board, the year in between. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, we could do that, or we could even do it even potentially after the November election, potentially, and you could put it in at that time. Then there should be plenty of time in between any primaries or anything like that.
But as you said, then we're in budget. Oh, but it's not that.
There's always something going on. So I mean, to me, it doesn't matter from my standpoint. We can fit it in at any point.
If we put it off too far, my assumption is that it'll get forgotten.
I would go with big district, low district.
In minuscule.
Population-wise or square miles?
Blue, yellow.
Yeah, I was going to say, square miles?
Square miles.
I might be big dog then.
Big dog. Okay, big dog.
No.
What do we do?
No. Absolutely.
But if the board wants to say, you know, just come back, I mean, if you want to leave it up to staff to come back with a good time, we can work with Mr. Payne's office. And like I said, I don't think we need to push it off. I mean, let some of the dust settle with the new administration coming in with all the redistricting and maybe come... summertime or maybe after the
June or July
election, we could implement something or make try and go forward with the amendment change.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it in close proximity to an election before the election.
Right.
Because that might confuse voters. Mm-hmm. You're going to do it in close proximity to an election.
They're going to be confused enough because there's some of them that are changing whether we know what happened the last time.
Yeah, and we can work with the registrar's office too, just to kind of see where some of the primaries are falling and what's looking like, just to make sure we're giving ourselves plenty of time so people can get acclimated and kind of
ballots printed and all that.
She probably ought to have some input.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll certainly reach out to Ms. Pace.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Harris. Or you still there for the next one? You're there for the next one. Okay, no appointment presentation. Flagana County Arts Council MOU status update. Ms. Harris.
Good evening, and I'm still Kelly Harris. I don't know who I'll be at the end of this presentation, but that's who I am right now. took me a while to get this back to you. In August, we talked about this. I will say it did not go the way I expected it to go, and then redistricting derailed any brain cells that I might have had to focus to this. So my apologies for not getting this back to you sooner. But things changed a little bit since the last time we talked about this to now, not the least of which is that we are meeting here now. So I want to remind the board that no action is being requested tonight. This is simply a status update and a request for direction from the board. I am joined tonight online, Sharon Harris, the president of the Fluvanna County Arts Council, and I believe Mr. Horace Scruggs is sitting behind me somewhere. They are here to answer questions if necessary, but not necessarily to be a part of the presentation. I'm going to try and keep us out of the weeds as best as possible and remind you that we are not talking about the actual MOU tonight, but rather the sort of bigger picture. But of course, I'll be available to answer any questions you may have. So, what is this? A review and renewal of a memorandum of understanding between the County of Fluvanna and the Fluvanna County Arts Council. We haven't really looked at this since about 2008. In 2013, something was looked at, but it was never signed, never brought to the board for official action. So 2008 was the last time. Why? So that we can outline the roles and responsibilities of each entity, the county and the Arts Council, and potentially to allow for expanded use of the Performing Arts Council, Performing Arts Center. Boy, I get this all confused. Without adding county staff. So why now? Again, the MOU has not been renewed or reconsidered since 2008, and you might have noticed that we really need meeting space. The county has a great need for meeting space right now. So taking another look at this MOU, see where we are in the years since 2008. I'm not a math person, I'm not going to attempt to do that. We need to clarify the roles and responsibilities that will be vital to sharing this space in a way that's fair to both of us. Board of Supervisors no longer has the circuit courtroom available as a meeting space. And what the heck did I mean there? Access to... Yeah, so the Arts Council owned equipment, the lights, the AV equipment, all of that helps us with community engagement. We are able to have microphones that are actually loud enough for folks to hear on Zoom. And some of this is ours, some of this is theirs. Having access to what is theirs is helping us. In talks with the Arts Council, they have hopes and dreams of having a drop-down screen that will be there with a projector. That would help us as well project to whoever's in the audience or even Zoom. We're pretty well taken care of. The Arts Council would like to increase art offerings. The county would like to increase its art offerings to the residents to get more involvement in the arts. We have the space. Let's find ways to do it. And we'd also like to do COVID-friendly events outdoors at Pleasant Grove. We got a heck of a lot of good stuff there, and let's find ways to get people out there. I just have a feeling this summer people are going to be crawling all over themselves to get outside and do anything. Let's find ways to do it. Okay, this is a very quick rundown of why we are meeting in this space. I think everybody's probably familiar with it, but let's take a look anyway. March 15th, COVID arrived. Governor Ralph Northam issued an executive order, declaration of state of emergency due to novel coronavirus COVID-19. March 16th, the Supreme Court of Virginia issued an order declaring a judicial emergency, which effectively closed the courts to anything but essential judicial activities, so we got booted out. In March of 2020, the Board of Supervisors began meeting in the Morris Room in the County Administration Building. In April of 2020, we moved to the library in order to accommodate social distancing and other mandates related to the public health emergency. In October of 2021, we moved to the Carysbrook Performing Arts Center. There was a library, a book sale at the library. They hadn't had one in 2 years, and they had a whole lot of books they needed to move out of there. So we moved here to accommodate that, but also because we needed a larger venue for public hearings that were coming up through the Planning Commission and coming to the board that we knew would have higher attendance. So I just think that the governing body of the locality should have a really nice permanent home, or at least a long-term temporary home. So here we are, no longer the Board of Supervisors Roadshow. There is a long history of understanding and agreement between the county and the Arts Council you can see in this picture. I believe that picture is the hanging of the plaque at the grand opening, or around the time of the grand opening in 97. Back in 96, there was an agreement for the management of the Cary Performing Arts Center. In 99, they updated it. Again, in 2008, there was a resolution for the use, and then there was a policy for the use. In October of that same year, they added the inventory that was held by the Arts Council, so that was actually incorporated into the resolution and the policy. And in March of 2018, the policy was updated just for formatting and administrative changes. There was no content changed in that. I think to say that the relationship between the Arts Council and the county has been fraught at times is not inaccurate. And this just brings us to where we are today, clarifying even further what those roles and responsibilities might be. Any proposed changes would necessitate change to the policy 9.4 Cary's Performing Arts Center use, which was adopted March 7th, 2018. One of the proposed changes would be to grant the Fluvanna County Arts Council expanded authority over scheduling use of the Performing Arts Center, subject to the provisions of proposed revisions. Say that fast. And it proposes a collaborative relationship regarding events at Pleasant Grove Park stage, the stage in the back by the pole barn. Mr. Dahl, Mr. Aaron Spitzer, and myself sort of brainstorm what some challenges would be to allowing a volunteer agency to oversee county-owned property. We have that precedent with our firehouses, so that's not completely uncommon. But some of the concerns that that arose, which I think is on the next one, Eric, would be scheduling to make sure that the county would have the space when we need it, that the Arts Council would be able to schedule a performance season schedule. I've been struggling all day to what you call that. Their calendar would be set, and that we would potentially continue to have community use of the Performing Arts Center. The current MOU does allow for organizations to rent the space as well, although I don't believe that's been done in a few years anyway. Security of the building and the state requirements for the Department of Social Services were considered. Access to the building, who has keys. There is already a system in place for the keys, the number of keys or sets of keys that the Arts Council has. That would all be factored into that. Let's see. Of course, any MOU that comes before the board would be subject to approval by the county attorney. That was begun last August when I first brought this to you. We did not complete that. We've had a lot of input since then, so that would be a process we'd need to begin again, depending on what you tell me to do. I think that's about all I have in terms of the presentation, but what can I answer for you? Or can I answer
for you? I don't have any questions, but I promised the council that I would make a statement apologizing. Last time the subject came up, I misrepresented some of the actions of the council, and I did not do my due diligence or my job in terms of making sure that what I was saying was accurate. So I mischaracterized some of the efforts and energies of the council and how they operate. I had multiple meetings with multiple members of the council, and I think I feel comfortable with the direction of the council and what they're trying to do. And certainly at no point in time did I mean to disparage the council in its entirety. I focused my comments primarily to the executive committee. My understanding is that the council met with the executive committee, that they revised their bylaws and made changes, and came to a conclusion where the council and the executive committee were all in concurrence. So, while I still had submitted some thoughts and ideas, and I know that you haven't revised the MOU, for the most part, I thought the MOU was in order, and again, just apologize sincerely to the Arts Council and specifically to the Executive Committee and in particular to Mrs. Harris. Even though I did not mention her name at the time, I refer to the President of the Council. So again, my sincere apologies.
Yeah, so just from a staff standpoint, like I said, we want to come forward, we want to kind of, you know, put the MOU and kind of get it in writing and be done with it. Again, you know, we envision kind of being in this space for until a new admin building opens up potentially, Yeah, and so we need meeting space. So, I mean, this has been a great space. You know, when we had some larger events, it's accommodated the crowds, and, you know, we're kind of, as you can see, we're transitioning a little bit here to try and find ways easier to be more of a breakdown and setup mode as we move forward. So, you know, we've got use for it, but it can be easily transition to kind of, you know, transitions for the Arts Council to use it as well. So, you know, we've been having lots of good back and forth dialogue with, you know, Ms. Harris, Sharon Harris, and Horace Scruggs with the Arts Council regarding, you know, events that they want to do. And specifically, too, in this space, too, you know, trying to transition to utilize the audio equipment, you know, the lighting, you know, and they're talking about, you know, trying to get a drop-down screen behind here. So that would help, too, with some potentials of not having to use the TVs if we're breaking, you know, doing a lot of...
Or if they've got stage stuff set up in the back and we can move forward a little bit, that can be the break in between the two.
Yeah, so we're trying to find a good, happy medium to working this out and you know, being in the space, but also letting them get back in and have some of their offerings, you know, kind of continue.
Mr. Scruggs, did you want to add anything, sir? Come down to the microphone, please.
Yeah.
Just please state your name for us. Gotta be nice to him. He's keeping me up as a kid.
Horace Scruggs, Fluvanna County Arts Council. I think it's just a continuation of what the Arts Council has been doing in the past with the expanded way of presenting things at Pleasant Grove. Pleasant Grove is a wonderful space. Outdoor venues are really big these days, and so I think having the ability to use that space would just do wonders for the county. As has already been said, there are a lot of people looking for outdoor COVID-friendly events. Obviously, we can't have them in this space, and there are a lot of, and along with that, there are a lot of shuttered musicians out there which are itching for places to perform. So I think those two things together will give us the ability to put on something at Pleasant Grove that would be well attended. And I think we can come up with the staff and volunteers to run that in a safe manner that would be agreeable with Aaron Spitzer and the county as a whole. So it's just a matter of just continuing what we've been doing. Putting things in this space to make it better for all that use it would be great. And so I think we're definitely moving forward with that plan. It's just a matter of trying to find an easier way to do the setup and pull down so that we can get in and do what we need.
All right.
Any questions?
Well, Ms. Harris, did you have anything you wanted to add, ma'am?
No, Horace is a great spokesman for the Arts Council, but we absolutely, what he said, we are looking forward to working with you all and to try to be collegial as the other Mrs. Harris used to share the space, but we have a lot of artists and musicians that want to be able to safely bring the arts to the community. So we would welcome an opportunity to expand a little bit about what we're doing. And also, as the other Mrs. Harris and Mr. Dahl have said, we're here to help with the technical assistance when you guys need that as well. So any questions, please let me know.
Maybe we'll have to come up with numbers for Ms. Harris and Ms. Harris. Like we did with Coach Sheridan tonight. We're 19 and 20.
That's right,
so
and 20,
we can get
that's
you
right.
Guys straight.
Gotta get the jersey.
The one thing I will say is we definitely look forward to working with y'all. Love the things that you do. And when I said Mr. Scruggs used to beat me up, that's because I was a little 10th grader on the football team and he was the senior starter. Okay? So I used to be the guy across that he got to work on his blocking skills on. So if I got a few extra bruises, it just happened. But no, the one time of the year that we really are strapped as a board for time is this February, March, and the beginning of April, because we have to meet every week. So that's the one time. I don't know if we can figure out a way to work around y'all's schedule around that so that we're not getting in y'all's way. Ms. Harris?
Hi, it's nice to meet you.
Okay.
So one of the things that I believe the other Mrs. Harris and I discussed was just having availability, the board, the county, from 8 a.m. Tuesday morning until 5 p.m. Thursday, that would be county time, and all other time would be available.
Okay.
for the Arts Council.
Most of our concerts are on weekends.
Friday or February and March. That's when we're really boom, 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 boom.
Right. Yeah, but even during those times, again, we're just talking.
Just take that block of time.
Yeah.
If y'all can work around that, that's awesome.
And I think it's a matter of if we know the parameters in which each entity is working, then we set the calendar well in advance. Usually our calendar is set in August, and then beginning to promote it in September. So, and again, our concerts are generally on weekends.
And that's going to be great, because that's the thing we talked about was Pleasant Grove, being able to get together and do things together.
Yeah.
Because the more we can, lack of a better word, show off Pleasant Grove, that is just an absolutely fabulous facility or place to go do these things.
I think by the time springtime comes, people, if they can get some little outdoor, concert events, whatever, get some food trucks and stuff, that would be a great space.
Any sporting event right now, people are dying to get outside. Yep. It does, they're as jam-packed as they can get, period.
So I think we've got our direction, like I said, it'll just be about having open communication with the Arts Council, too, as we move forward and, we'll come up with a good schedule. But what we'll do is we'll bring the MOU back and we'll just do a good final review of it and just bring something back that's acceptable to both the Arts Council and the board. So
sounds good.
Thank you.
Good seeing you, Mr. Groves. Alrighty, next.
I don't remember Mel Sheridan ever looking so young as he did in that picture.
I wasn't talking about the picture when they showed the plaque being put up. Oh. Mel's the dark-haired supervisor in there.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
That was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
A Grecian formula. I'm on eggshells now. Alright. C, Fort Union Commerce Park Master Plan Report, Mr. Dahl.
And again, we've got Carolyn Howard with Draper Aiden Associates. She'll kind of be taking the lead. And again, we call it Fort Union Business Park. We call it Fort Union Commerce Park. We can call it Fort Union Industrial Park. Again, that's something we're going to have to come up with a formal name. But so again, we've got Jennifer Schmecks here, too, from an economic development standpoint. She can certainly answer questions. And Ms. Howard, she's here via Zoom. And when you want me to progress through the slides, just let me know.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you tonight about what we're calling now Fort Union Commerce Park, final name TBD. If you want to move on to the next slide. So last year we were contracted to complete a master plan and due diligence for the Fort Union Commerce Park, the parcels outlined in yellow, to raise the tier level of the Fort Union Commerce Park to a 3 using the Virginia Business Ready Sites Program site characterization tier levels. Are you all familiar with that?
Can you quickly go over that so that anybody that's listening, we are, but anybody else listening probably isn't.
Okay, sounds good. So I'm going to spell out the acronym. So VEDP, which is the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, about in 2017-2018, realized that Virginia, to be competitive in the national and even the international market to attract businesses and industries, manufacturers to Virginia, that we need to have more available sites throughout the Commonwealth. And so they developed a program called the Virginia Business Ready Sites Program, otherwise known as BBRSP, and a site characterization tier level to help both the local governments as well as prospects that may come to your park understand what their level of what the site's level of readiness is, and provide information. The higher the tier, the more ready it is. Try to uncover the unknowns, reducing the risk for a prospect to come to your site and develop and have jobs created in your community. So fast forward, that that program has evolved, and I'm going to put in a nutshell what the tier levels are. So there are five tier levels. Tier level one is that you've identified a site. It's out there. You may not have a sales price on it, but you've identified a site with your owner. Tier two means that the site's identified, you have a sales price for the site, you have an agreement from the owner to market it, and it's compatible with the comprehensive plan. That's key. So that's a key element between tier one and two. Tier two to tier three is tier three, you have all the due diligence completed, and I can list those out in a second, and the site is zoned properly for industrial commercial use. And I'll get back to that with relationship to this site here in a second. The due diligence that's required to meet a tier three level through the VBRS program is boundary and topographic survey, phase one ESE, phase one environmental site assessment, cultural resources survey, threatened and endangered survey. Those two are just desktop reviews. Waters of the U.S., otherwise known as wetlands and streams delineation determinations. I feel like I'm forgetting one, boundary survey, and master plan, which is what we did. So that gets you tier three. Tier four essentially says, well, if there's any infrastructure that needs to happen to make the site more ready, whether it be a road, water, sewer, mass grading the site, all those, what needs to be done has been designed and permitted, not necessarily constructed, but designed and permitted and ready to go within 18 months. And then tier five is you're ready to go and can be finished. They've changed the requirements, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I wish I had it right in front of me. If it was like within 12 months, you can be ready to go for a building. So that's in a nutshell the VBRS tiering. Do you have any questions about that?
And the one thing, too, just from the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, when businesses come into the Commonwealth, they want to be able to be into a site quick. I mean, so for instance, this study right here took about 6 months, I'm going to say. Carol, is that about correct?
Yeah, correct.
So, I mean, you know, every step we get closer, you know, when businesses are coming here, they want to be up and running within 12 months at minimum. And Jennifer, you can certainly chime in on that.
Nope, you're right. That's exactly what it is.
So the more that we can get the site ready to go, and again, I think this was a good step that the board took. You know, Zion's Crossroads, we certainly have, you know, I think we've got natural growth that's going to happen there just by its location. Commercial growth that we're looking for there. But for Fork Union, I think we've got to have a little bit more of a little bit more of a calculated plan to make that area grow a little bit. So anyway, Carolyn, you can go on. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I do want to clarify. I did find my cheat sheet about tier four and tier five because they've recently changed it. In a nutshell, tier four is the site is positioned to support development such that building construction can take place within 12 to 18 months or less. Okay. And then tier five is the site is considered shovel ready with all site permits in place or identified such that building construction can begin as soon as necessary land. As soon as necessary land disturbance permits can be obtained. That clarifies that. So what we have done as part of this project is completed all the due diligence for the sites outlined in yellow and a master plan, which I'm going to show you here shortly. The one thing that still needs to happen for the entire site in yellow to be considered a tier three, and the blue sites need to be rezoned to industrial. The purple sites are already limited industrial, so that's what it needs to be rezoned to, and I know that Eric is going to be working on that. Existing conditions are somewhat challenging. This is the red lines are 5-foot contours, and the blue lines show the waters of the U.S. that have been delineated out there, as well as some wetlands in the purple. So there are some kind of constraints that we have on the site. Right now, if you go through, if you go make one big pad area where that stream is going down the middle of the, yes, thank you for pointing. That is very expensive and a long permitting process. So that is one of the constraints that we recommended, just kind of stay away from those, all right? Because it can be so costly and time consuming to get that through DEQ. For example, I'm working on another project that needs about 1,400 linear feet of stream to be graded over. So they're required to get mitigation credits. And that those mitigation credits for that roughly 1,400 linear feet are going to cost in the range of $2.5 to $3 million.
So it's expensive. So it's expensive. We're trying to work with the land as it is without impacting the natural features.
Can you redefine waters of the U.S., please?
Sure. Waters of the U.S. is a stream, whether it's intermittent, perennial, that is connected. Essentially, it's connected to another water body. So it's not an isolated, depending on the size too. So it's a wetland or a stream that's connected to another system. So as you can see here, the blue lines, if you can point to those, the light blue lines are connected to the dark blue lines. And it's 5:30 at night and my brain can't remember the name of that creek right off the top of my head.
It's Judy Creek. Mm-hmm. It's Judy Creek.
Thank you. So that is considered a waters of the U.S. because there's a direct connection. So if you think about it, I mean, that's a simple terms, but if there's a direct connection, then it's a waters of the U.S. If it meets the hydrology and the hydraulics and the right vegetation is there and all that kind of stuff.
And then the wetlands are not as big of an issue to develop on as
they
the
are.
Waters of the U.S. are there? Okay.
They are, but there are some, I expect some mitigation that would be required, but we primarily, the master plan that I'll show you here in a second, minimizes the disturbance.
Thank you.
So this is a map showing the waters of the U.S. There are some ephemeral streams and some perennial streams. You can see the wetlands in the green up by the firehouse, primarily. So those are the main constraints that we had in developing the master plan. So when we took a look at the master plan, we have a holistic view what's going on here. And you can see with the topo map, these are 1-foot contours that you are seeing there. You know, it's not flat, it's not rolling. There's some significant topographic constraints. So our goals with these phases that we're proposing is to balance the earthwork. Last thing you want to do is come into a site and have to haul in or haul off a lot of material. Now, granted, you could go put it on another site, but then you've got to worry about permitting land disturbance for, you know, adjacent site. But for the purposes of this exercise, we were looking at trying to balance each phase. So this is phase one, which provides about an 1,800 linear foot road to serve an initial pad area of about, I can read that, 11 acres. Open up my finger so I can actually read them.
Yeah, if you look at pad A is about 11.3 acres. That's the large pad. And then pad B is about 1.3 acres. And again, these were kind of contemplated first
you know, you could certainly do a full road to the back, but, and I'm not saying the board's going to want to do that, but from a phasing approach, you know, actually doing a road halfway, it kind of provides some good possibilities too, and we can kind of show that as we go forward. And again, so the buildings on there, building one and two, building one is proposed at about 46,000 square feet, and then building two at 86,000 square feet, and then building three at 26,000 square feet. If you remember this site right here, not necessarily building one or two, but Yay Wellness, this was a site that they had identified as wanting to move forward with the county. And not saying that that's a done deal or going to go through, but again, any business, this would kind of be a good initial first phase.
Yeah.
Right. And that could be one building there. It could be three buildings. This just kind of gives you a visualization of the possibilities. Phase two, also note, along the road, we'd be extending a water line, okay, to serve the site. Phase two would be another pad, what we're calling Pad C, and that is approximately 6.3 acres. And that's the actual outline of the pad. The grading goes further outside of it to match existing grades. And that line will provide you with approximately 100,000 square foot of building. Again, it could be one building, two, or multiple buildings on that particular pad. And that could be built off of that first phase road access point. Moving on to phase three is the much larger pad site, which is approximately 18 acres. And on here, we're showing a building size of approximately 300,000 square feet. That is an additional road extension of over 800 feet, along with a water main extension. Again, this is just showing you the possibilities.
And just as reference, Silk City, the Carriageburg plant, that building is about 180 or 190,000 square feet. So again, you could potentially fit a larger 300,000 square foot building there. So, you know, I mean, there's certainly, that would be a larger use that, you know, is not as typical as maybe a 50,000 square foot facility.
Right, and then we move on to phase four, and then I'll get into the other kind of issue with this site. So phase four, pad E, it's a smaller pad, it's about 4 acres, would require an extension of a road to the site. I would call this kind of your, unless somebody wants to be really isolated, this would be the last phase, because it would require the additional expense of the road. And because of grading, you're not getting a really big pad area out there, only being about 4 acres. So, but just to show you what you could do with the property. Now, we have water out there. We don't have sanitary sewer out at these sites. So there are a couple of options that we outlined, and this is not my area of expertise. I had others in the firm work on this, but since you don't have any viable sanitary sewer system nearby, the options here are to do on-site septic system per building pad area, if you will. So these buildings that we're showing here would need to maybe get smaller if part of the area needed to be used for a septic system. The other option is to have one large septic system for the entire development. I'm not so sure that's very viable, but it is an option. And then another option is to have a package plant specific for the industrial park, which means you would have to have, you know, an operator and maintain it. But that is an option, and that would probably provide you with more capacity and a more would allow for larger buildings due to the compact nature of the package plant. So all this is viable, but the sanitary sewer issue and how to deal with wastewater may have to come by a prospect basis.
Yeah, and again, too, you know, as we've discussed with the board, the sewage capacity in the county is going to probably be our biggest hurdle countywide down the road. I don't care if it's Zion's Crossroads, I don't care if it's Fork Union. That's probably the one thing that we really need to work on and find some alternate solutions. You know, I mean, for down here, and this doesn't necessarily, you know, correlate, but, you know, there may be some opportunities to work with the Department of Corrections, expanding what they have there. You know, we've done some due diligence reports for the Fork Union plant in the Fork Union area through FUMA. So the board's already obligated some funding, and we're studying some of the sewage shortfalls that we have to kind of make some of the economic growth happen.
Any questions about the phasing?
I guess the only question I would have is, if you were to do on-site sewer on that, you mentioned maybe limiting the size of the pads. Is that because of the grading issues that are there in terms of the of basically just not having a flat enough area, or is it just because of the capacity, and how would you go about measuring that capacity to begin with if these are sort of large industrial buildings versus highly dense commercial buildings?
I'm having a hard time understanding the question. These masks are driving me crazy.
I'm sorry. Again, so you mentioned if you did have on-site sewer on there, mm-hmm. you know, drain fields, that you might have to limit the size of the pads in order to do that. Is that driven more by the contour of the land or the limitation in terms of the acreage itself? And you could do a combination of on-site and packaging, I guess, as well, too.
What was that last one? Combination of on-site?
Combination of on-site with the package plan as well, or is that overkill?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Yeah, and it's a factor of both. It's topography and just space, and trying to stay away from those waters in the U.S. as well. But keep in mind, we also have, as part of the study, we did not do any perp tests or anything like that, so all that would still have to be done.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
I have one question that I'm sitting here thinking about. When I look at this, did we consider water treatment plant?
Yes, I mean, so here's the thing, you know, certainly from the Dominion's water supply improvement proper money, right. there's a good amount of funding now for water supply improvements in here. I don't necessarily know that we would want to. We could. I don't know if we would want to allocate or use up the space in this area to put a water treatment plant necessarily. If there's,
okay, we could look at getting something else.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's you know, the board approved a preliminary engineering report for the Fork Union water supply improvements, and once that like I said, we have to work with Dominion a little bit here on some of the funding for that, because they've allocated funding. But once that preliminary engineering report's done, that'll kind of really tell you, you know, here are some areas that we think would be good options. And then also from just a engineering standpoint, they're going to tell you what are some different options that you could do as far as a water treatment facility, an elevated storage tank, a raw water storage tank. As Carolyn was saying, you know, this pad E right here, you know, you may need some additional earthwork done. So maybe that is not a great pad to build on for a building. Maybe you put some type of water utility components on that pad instead, whether it's an elevated storage tank or you put a water treatment plant, or maybe a raw water, the raw water storage tank, you know, since you're right near the business park, maybe there's a need for a business user to only need to use raw water versus having treated water. So having some flexibility in some of this will certainly help out. In addition, the preliminary engineering report will actually tell us a little bit more for where we should be doing that type of stuff.
And I'm guessing that's future site of the burn building if we get that done.
Yeah, right here, this is the burn building site that's been engineered also for that site location. Actually, we're working on
getting ready to, I think, go out to bid here, I think, shortly. Ms. Toller's not here, but yes, that's where the burn building site would be located.
And I know you probably haven't had a chance to look at Brad Humphrey's information on the USDA in terms of pipeline improvements, but might be worth seeing if it applies here.
Oh yeah, I think there's lots of opportunities from USDA. There's, I know Mr. Sheridan sent me some information on, was the same thing?
I think it's the same
I think there's lots of opportunities for some potential outside funding sources to help with some of the
aging infrastructure.
Yeah. That's a lot of the infrastructure money is really going to get it there.
So. Between there and Columbia, I imagine we could probably find places to get those used.
Can somebody elaborate on burn building?
Fire training center.
So right now, if we do any training, we have to travel to Albemarle, Buckingham, Goochland. And right now we're looking at just trying to get one here so we can keep the equipment in county.
The county's been working
like
on that.
This afternoon we had two structure fires, thank goodness.
Nothing to do with the Yay Wellness proposal.
Yeah.
Would you show me where the building is, the fire building?
Yeah, it's right. I'm not sure if you can see my cursor. It's right there.
Okay. See pad E, right just to the right, that small building behind the community center?
What's on the other side?
The firehouse.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So right, it's kind of hard. My cursor's not showing up great on the
That's the community center.
That's the community center right there, and then the Fork Union.
You're going to have to figure out a way to make that thing colored.
Fire station right there.
Okay.
And that corner, corner property up to the top right.
Is that
just a Jake property that he doesn't want to sell, or
that's a house, right? That's that house that's right there. I'm not sure. I don't think he owns that.
I don't think he does. No, that's a.
His is down here to the bottom where the old his office building is.
It just seems like a natural. I'm not proposing to go spend more money on more land, but it just sounds curious why that little corner was.
There is a cemetery there.
Right in between.
Okay.
Correct.
Half and half.
Yeah, half and half.
All African American cemetery.
Yep.
Because this whole property was at one time just one parcel, and it's been divided up several times in and out. The last time was, I guess it was last year, that we acquired these last two properties.
Oh, you're talking about our acquisition of those two properties, yes. Do we need to look into changing the, I see that they're still agricultural.
We need to go forward and then switch.
We own the property.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so we ran a couple of the estimates a couple different ways here. So if you recall, the phase one, which is the road extension, about the 1,800 linear feet, and then the graded pad for pad A and B, and the water line. And that's roughly just under $3 million is an estimate for that. Then to go in and do pad C, which you don't need to extend the road for because it's already there, or the water main, that's about $1.1 million. That's because of grading. And then pad three, which is the large pad site, includes a road extension to the site as well as the mass grade, and that's about $3.4 million. And then pad four, which we were talking about, needed the road extension and a water extension, and I propose that once the burn building gets built, there's gonna be a water main extension to that the two get connected to provide some sort of a loop on the system. And that's $1.3 million. Now, on the next slide, we broke it down a little further as far as phase one is concerned. So what if you just did the road? And keep in mind, these aren't going to add up to $2.9 million because now we're starting to get kind of out of balance, mass grading-wise, as well as you start getting out of, you lose the efficiencies, especially in earthwork, of doing it all at once. So the road only is about $1.5 million. Pad A is 1.2, and that is mainly because it's no longer in balance. It really needs some of the fill and the cut from the road and Pad B to make that work. Now, obviously, we can move things up or down, but the way we had it set up kind of all worked well together to get back to that larger pad site. Pad B is about 600,000, and the water main's about 400,000.
And just one thing, just one thing to kind of add to that too for the board, you know, and the reason I asked Carolyn just to kind of break this down a little bit is, you know, maybe the board says at some point, well, you know, maybe we want to do a road, or maybe we don't want to do anything, or maybe we want to do more. The one thing with some of the water supply improvement funds, there may be a way for the county, if we kind of position what we're doing long-term, where some of those water supply improvements go, there may be a way to run some of the water lines through this property if some of the large water components are on the property as well. So those are just some things we would have to look at as we go further in some of these preliminary engineering reports. But again, this kind of just gives you a better idea. And again, all these costs, these have in them engineering costs, plus they have a 25% contingency built on. And Carolyn, correct me if I'm wrong, they're based upon today's prices, correct?
That's correct. So that's why there's a 25% contingency, because everybody knows how material prices have fluctuated, and you don't know when this is going to occur.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, the 25% contingency in a lot of these are, you know, it's a significant amount of the cost. But again, you know, we want to make sure that we're being ultra conservative, just so the board is fully aware of what it would cost to do any work on that property if they so choose.
I think this is a lot of money.
Oh yeah, it is.
Prepare this, and we're not guaranteed that somebody's going to want this. And they may want a different shape.
Yeah,
we're not building the buildings, we're just putting the pads.
Correct, we're not building the buildings, and we're not necessarily building the pads. I mean, the board may say, you know what, we don't want to build the pads, we just want a road to get someone there, and they build the pad, and they build the building, or maybe we do nothing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't need to have a pad in place for phase three, do you?
We're at phase three right now, I believe.
We're at tier three, right?
Once we rezone, we'll be at tier three.
We're at tier three.
This would put us at tier four.
If you do any further work, and Carolyn, if let's just say we did the minimum and put a road in, would this put you at tier four?
I would say yes, because you've got the road and infrastructure. The only thing that might hold that back from a tier, remember, it's the 12 to 18 months. So the only thing that has to be done is mass grading. That can definitely be done. And whatever's decided with the sewer.
Well, you would run the water line when you're running the road anyhow, because it makes sense to do that.
Yeah, you potentially would. We just want to at least show some of the breakouts if there's potentially... Again, if you're not doing it all at one, if part of the larger Fork Union water supply project, there's a way to use some of that funding to not be part of this.
But to Mrs. Howard's point, you know, breaking it out piecemealing like this is 3.7 million versus 2.9.
Correct.
So that's a big difference. That's $800,000.
Yeah, it is. Is this, to get these different tiers, is this somehow we're going to get a loan?
No.
This is just our investment.
It's the county's investment if they want to go this route. Again, from businesses to set up in the Commonwealth, they are looking for, they want to be open quick. That's some of the big... The big hurdles.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
But did you catch this sentence that says the location of Fork Union Commerce Park is not favorable towards meeting the definition of regionally significant?
Yes.
That's for Go Virginia.
Yeah, that's for Go Virginia funding.
So to your point, I mean, I was sitting here thinking as you started, location, 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 and is this, if I was an investor, would I invest this amount of money in my own property in anticipation of that return. And I'm not saying whether I would or wouldn't, but it seems to be part of the question you're asking, and it's a good question.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's certainly something that the board has to take into consideration. To what point, how much do you really want to invest in this? I mean, I think the board took a really good step to get some of the due diligence master plan and stuff out of the way. And now really at this point, you know, it gets us up a tier. Someone coming to that site, they know some of the unknowns at this point. And maybe the board does absolutely nothing from this point on.
Sure.
And the easiest thing we could do is go ahead and rezone the other parcels.
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to talk about a couple slides down the road here.
All right, let's see if Ms. Howard finish.
Yep.
Well, that's okay. I would, if we could go back to that other slide, I mean, there are other options here, and I just want to throw one out there. One of the things that you could do is, I wish I could point, see where that, right before building 3, maybe you build the road to there, okay? And then at the appropriate time of year, also timber, maybe pad site B and A, so that a prospect could actually access and actually see the potential.
We're ahead of it. We already timbered it.
Oh, that's right. Okay, then never mind.
No, whole site's timbered. I mean,
the whole site's timbered.
There's some smaller parcels on this side. I mean, some of these newer parcels,
the ones that we have to change the zoning on.
Those have not been timbered.
Okay, never mind. Like, oh, moving forward. Well, that's good. At least people can see what they're getting. All right. So we talked about the wastewater service. Route 15, the intersection there. The proposal includes it'd probably be another additional $500,000 to create a left turn lane from northbound, and a right turn lane in from southbound. We had a traffic study done, and that's what would be required for the development of this site. So it'd be improvement of the existing intersection. The other thing, and I understand the county has a lot of community amenities. The other thing that really this site is conducive for are sidewalks and trails, taking advantage of those streams as educational opportunities. And there's another locality who has built a disc golf course along the stream banks. It doesn't impact them, but it's a cool idea. So just something to throw out there.
Tony paid me to say that, didn't he? No. I'm sorry.
But I mean, I'm all for it.
We've got one at Pleasant Grove.
Yeah. So that's just an idea of what can be used. So let's talk about funding. Unfortunately, BEDP has funding available, but since this site, it does not have at least 100 developable acres, it does not meet the requirements for BEDP funding. We're hoping in the future that 100 acre threshold will come down. Because many prospects in the Commonwealth are not looking for 100 acres. They're looking for, 20 to 50 acres in that kind of realm. And so really your options are for the access road is going through the VDOT Economic Development Access Funding, where you could get up to approximately $650,000. There are some requirements to that. You need to have a prospect at the end of the road, however long you build the road, within 5 years. After the downturn in 2008, they allowed that to kind of, they softened that requirement a bit, but they're back to that 5 year. US EDA money, there is some available. It comes with a lot of red tape and a lot of requirements, but it's available for this type of project. We worked on one in another rural county that built the road and the infrastructure utilizing a portion of EDA funds, so it can be done. And then someone alluded to earlier, the Go Virginia money that requires a meaningful, it requires it to be a regionally significant site. It also requires meaningful collaboration with another locality. So, you know, that funding is out there, but you have to meet those two criteria.
And you know, for the Go Virginia funding, you know, certainly from a, you know, Louisville County, they got Go Virginia funding for the Shannon Hill Business Park. I mean, it's huge. Well,
right. They got it for the preparation.
For the preparation, yes, like yeah.
They got everything.
No. I think they got $600,000 for right.
But they're spending, I don't know, some crazy number.
Yes. Now, again, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to work with Buckingham or a county south of us to make this a regional, more of a regional area from a Fluvanna, you know, kind of south Fluvanna portion.
And that is the presentation. And I should, any questions?
Well, somebody remind me, with these additional properties, with the total acreages?
It's 133 and some change.
So once we rezone them, then we will be over the 100 acres, yeah. Correct?
Usable acres.
Yes.
Developable.
It still won't be 100 acres developable?
No.
Well, technically, you could call it that if with paying the mitigation credits.
Yes.
But it would be challenging.
How short would we be?
Probably about 50.
50?
Wow. Yeah, because developable acres after they did all the work on this, it's about 50 developable acres as it stands with that build out that you saw there.
Did you, Ms. Howard, did you have more to say about that?
Yes, I do, and I just want to check my facts before it's contiguous as well. It's not only 100 developable, it also has to be contiguous.
Okay, so we do either have to purchase land near, next to that, not near, but next to it.
Yep.
So, do we know how many Tier 4 or 5 sites are in the state of Virginia right now?
Oh. Very few.
Yeah, it's minimal.
Yeah.
Most of them are in Hampton Roads.
Right.
And there was even getting sites to Tier 3, I mean, granted, there are some sites at Tier 3, but in our region, there's not a whole lot of sites that are at Tier
3. And I will bet you the ones on Hampton Roads are where they took something down and just had the concrete.
It's farmland.
Yeah.
Oh, farmland. Yeah, it's flat. You don't have to do any grading down here.
Exactly.
I mean, from my work on Go Virginia and the economic development councils and so on, the lack of tier-ready sites is very significant.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the first place they go to look is, what do you have that's tier-ready that we can access and do something right now? So it makes a huge difference in terms of even being in the game, if you would, to compete for a large manufacturer to come in. And I think to Mr. Fairchild's earlier point, yes, location matters, but no offense to parts of South Carolina that I've never been to, but I mean, you know, they're out in the field as well too, right? They're out there too. So.
Yeah, I mean, from a logistics standpoint, you're probably not going to get a huge Amazon distribution center because there's no major highways nearby, and you know, it's about 20 minutes to 64. But you get the right type of business there. Someone may want to be off the beaten path a little bit. I mean, you know, for instance, you know, Yay Wellness, when they submitted, they didn't want to be necessarily, you know, near a lot of stuff. They wanted to be in a more rural area. So it's a matter of finding the right fit for that site. I mean, again, it's not going to be the desired site for everyone.
Right. And we also had another company that was looking at packaging.
Yep.
That chose another location and site. So. These opportunities do come up, and we do miss out on them. So, to the degree that you can put yourself on the map to be four with the minimal amount of expenditure, especially when you're using other funds, because it's not going to cost us that much more money to get to Tier 3. So, you know, we might be looking at, you know, net cost, depending on the approach that we took here, maybe another investment of $1 million or something along those lines.
We're not trying to get to tier three. We're at tier three, correct? After doing this study.
Yes.
I mean, we're two gavel hits away from being
right. Tier
three. And you know, and here's the thing with this thing. You know, we've got Jennifer's got VDP. Mm-hmm. They're still planning on coming out to look at the
yes.
site.
Yes, yeah. They're coming 2 weeks from now.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we get inquiries all the time, and there's been interest in this site from some. So mm-hmm. again, you know, nothing's inked and nothing's done. But
and there's a real shortage of large warehousing manufacturing type space.
There is. I mean, up at Zion's Crossroads right now, the board or actually through the planning commission, there's another building right next to the Clockner building. They're going to be starting
proposing,
they're going to be starting construction on the building there.
Up to 100,000 square feet.
They are proposing 200, but they may start with some smaller buildings.
I was listening to a news report, and this was, you know, a commercial guy that works in this space, and he's like, I just don't have anything to lease out any longer. I mean, there's just nothing left, you know, for this type of space. So there is a real need out there.
All right.
Let me say, I honestly don't know which way I would vote on this.
I know you're new, so I'm just giving you background in terms of these other organizations. Not saying you're wrong in questioning the investment, you know, but ultimately, does the county get a return on its investment? And you have to measure those things.
Yeah.
But in the game that's being played in terms of states competing against each other and using the VDEPs.
We just landed one in Zion's Crossroads because we had the space available with Stewart family.
Yep.
Well, and what's attractive about it?
And the Carysburg, I mean.
Went this way. It's back here.
Back here, yeah.
What's attractive to this site is that they're all different sizes. And what we're learning from VDP when they did their last study is about 50,000 square foot is your magic number, and each one of these buildings can be that. So, and we've had a lot of interest in the last month. I just got one sitting here earlier. So
I can't wait to hear these new names are going to come up. That was Mr. Ralph Mills' catch thing. They always had catchy names.
Yeah.
You said each one of these buildings could be 50,000, you said?
Well, they can either go up or down, so they're scalable.
Yeah,
so
this is not the dead set layout. Mm-hmm. I mean, that 300,000 square foot building could be 450,000 square foot buildings back there, or...
But how many square feet is building three?
Building three is, I'm sorry, here, let me... 26,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
But those two combined could be 50,000.
Yeah. You can do any configuration. This is just to try and get an idea, but I'm
just wondering if topography made, for example, building three kind of restricted to its footprint.
Well, I think over to the right of it, because that's where we're talking about that cemetery.
Yeah, right around there. So you don't want to go, you got some wetlands in the cemetery, so you don't want to really go that much further. And if you go back at some of the contour maps, I think there may be some contours right
you
around.
See a lot of lines right there.
Yeah, if you go back.
Yeah, so the orange line is like your pad area, what we didn't include behind there are the contours to slope down to meet existing grade. And so that's really the orange is your limit of a pad, if you will.
So in the case that's of three, the only way it gets bigger is to go up for the most part. Right?
Yeah, correct.
I mean, it would be hard to double the size of building three.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Yes.
Yes.
What I meant was, is on that pad, you can connect the two buildings together, is what she was saying earlier. So it could be a larger building or two smaller ones.
Yeah.
Talking about buildings one and two.
Or you have a pad A. Pad A, you can make one larger.
I thought you said any of those are.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so very much. Any other questions?
Yes.
We do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So really.
Thank you for the
Yeah, so really, really some of the next steps, I mean, again, you know, we talked to the board before about, and I certainly don't want to, you know, I'm remiss that Mrs. Booker couldn't be here tonight to hear this, and, you know, specifically since it's in her district, and so any type of naming, you know, the board, we really need that at some point, especially if we get it to a tier three, I think the board really needs to really think, What do we want to call this? I mean, because you got to have a name you want to stick with it.
Maybe get some involvement from some of the citizens in Fort Kenyon. Whatever.
Yeah, and so the next thing is, you know, I talked to Mr. Payne about this. Again, to get it to that tier three and get it more ready, you know, staff certainly thinks it would be a good idea to get those three additional parcels rezoned to the existing I-1 zoning for
it's useless not to.
What's that?
It's useless not to.
Can always be downzoned again, so.
Yeah.
If we don't
no cost to the county other than our time, right?
Correct. So. Again, this due diligence report, and again, there's a traffic study done with the due diligence report. So anytime you're submitting anything from a rezoning, we've got the traffic study, and again, you know, there's an existing zoning right here that's similar to it, and it's for a county purpose. But again, that's a board decision. So that, I guess, that's kind of the next thing that we're looking for is I don't know, from a formal vote. Yeah, you know, looking to move forward.
Have public hearings to rezone or not?
We'll have to go through the normal planning process.
Miss Eager, do you think we need to rezone?
Yes.
Mr. Fairchild?
I would think so.
Mr. O'Brien?
Yeah.
You got the head nods.
So we're trying
to get us to our dinner break so we can make it back for 7.
Yeah, we will move forward with that, and we'll go through the normal process. You know, it's going to go through the planning commission just as any rezoning does, and it'll come back to the board, and we'll go through the process.
Thank y'all so very much, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Howard.
All righty. Next up is the consent agenda. Minutes of January 19th of 2022, and E, local law enforcement block LOLE grant program FY19. Is there anything we want to pull from that? If not, do I have a motion for to adopt the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Is there any unfinished business?
Mr. Chairman, I have an item of unfinished business.
Yes, sir.
And it's in the nature of good news. You will recall our participation in the opioid settlement.
The settlement.
If you recall, this was coming up over the course of last year. Right. And in order to participate, you had to perfect your notifications and whatnot by the 2nd of January. We did that. It was significantly ahead of that. So we were time up. Today, I got an email from the Attorney General's office saying that all the participation was complete. It was going to be completed. If you recall, one of the things they had been saying was the amount of money that the Commonwealth gets and that each participating jurisdiction gets is going to be largely dependent on the number of participating localities. Closer to 100 they could give, the more, the better it would be. The Attorney General has said that the numbers have worked out well and we have 100% participation. So we're ready to go. Now your next question is how much money do we get? We haven't received any further information on that, and we haven't received any information when we're going to get it or in what form. But it is proceeding, and it's proceeding the way it was projected to proceed.
Good news. $10. If we get $10, it's $10 more than we have. I'm not making it light.
Don't be optimistic.
Next up, is there any new business?
Other than just mentioning what Mr. Humphreys had sent us, that's the only new business. Start taking a look at that.
I don't know if we've sent it out to y'all, if y'all seen it, but it's just some program where we can get grant type money to do infrastructure with drinking water.
Yeah, Mr. Humphreys used to be in the Public Works Department at Louisa County. He's moved into representing sort of the southwest portion of the state for the use of USDA funds and for these larger public water or sewer type projects. And now that the infrastructure is built back, whichever plan it is that was passed, funded a lot of that. There's a number of significant dollars, and he'd mentioned in passing when I met with him that this was coming. And so he forwarded that information to us, and I think to Mr. Dahl. I don't know if he forwarded it to you guys or not.
I'm sorry, I forgot. I sent it to, I think, Mr. O'Brien and I both forwarded it to Mr. Dahl just to show it to him. He should have sent it to y'all also. I apologize for that.
Did you say money coming?
Well,
no. In other words,
available.
Available. Specific money available for rural drinking water for dealing with these larger type of
drinking water issues. Which, with the age of the pipes in Fort Union and Columbia, we may possibly be in line for some of that if we can apply.
Yeah, I think the grant, the deadline, I remember it was March.
April. Remember it was April.
I haven't even read through all the materials.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's on our radar screen. That's all.
We'll make sure we forward that. One of the two of us will forward that out to you guys. So y'all take a look at it.
With the line that's going to Beaverdam Market?
That's the one thing when I was speaking with that, when I spoke with DEQ previously, again, remember I talked to the board, you know, we're going to do the West extension, you know, we can request more money and DEQ can request more money, but he said there may be some more infrastructure funding coming available through some other sources that the county would be available, have access to. So again, yes, this money could potentially be available for that too.
Because that's drinking water.
Correct.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Hearing no more new business, I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please come to the microphone, state your name, address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Anybody online, Ms. Harris? Seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Nevada County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing legal matters, construction of Zion's Crossroads water and sewer system.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. We are now in closed session. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Nevada County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from an open meeting requirements under Section 2-2-3711A of Virginia, of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Fairchild. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. We are now back in session. We will now open our public hearing. Mr. Dahl?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you very much. So let me kind of go through this again. We've discussed this on many occasions before. So again, this is in the fiscal year 22 budget. $4.7 million was budgeted for numerous equipment, athletic field lighting, fire trucks, ambulance, public works equipment, storage facility for the equipment, county vehicles, and sheriff's vehicles. In September 2021, the board increased the amount for fire and rescue apparatus by $471 due to price increases. So the new total approved funding is for $5,231,500. Again, we did an RFP in November. RFP was issued November 12th for that $5,231,500 for financing for those items identified in the chart below, with different amortizations, 10 years and 7 years, based upon the useful life of that particular apparatus. Just one thing I want to point out. I noticed originally before I had two ambulances in here. It should have said one ambulance and one fire chief truck, which we have since corrected on the documents. And that was just an oversight on my part. It doesn't change anything with the funding amount. It was just, it was a issue with what I had on there as far as the purchase of the equipment. So the RFP on the financing closed December 8th with 11 responses. One was disqualified.
on December 15th. All the proposals were presented to the board. Interest rates ranged from 1.37% to 2.299%. And it was determined that JP Morgan Chase Bank was the best proposal, and they had the lowest proposal at the 1.37% for the 10-year amortization. And as I said, too, some of the apparatus that, that we were requesting 7 years, some of them within the overarching amortization, some of those are amortized over 7 years and some are 10 years. So we'll have some fluctuation in payments come, you know, year eight and stuff. Some of the debt will be less. So the original, I just want to think for the board to know, the original proposal was supposed to be good through 127, and just due to some timing issues we had on our part, JP Morgan Bank, they allowed a no-cost extension for the closing until today to us to be able to finalize this today. And again, the County Bond Council, County Attorney, and our financial advisor, they've reviewed the master lease purchase agreement together with all related documents, addenda, riders, attachments, and we've had a lot of emails flying on a lot of the changes on the documents to make sure they're right. And everyone, all attorneys are happy with where we are. So again, you know, we're basically at the point now for the board to officially approve the resolution for the financing. Just one thing to add to, just as a quick thing, Ms. Solis, Schedule A, which document is that?
Go under resolution.
Okay.
And scroll down.
Okay.
There you go.
Yep. One thing in the package, and this was just a slight oversight, Schedule A, the resolution references Schedule A, and again, it's just the equipment that we listed and we talked about. It was in other documents. This was in other documents, but the actual Schedule A itself that was made mention in the resolution was just inadvertently missed. So just this list, which was included in other documents, is also part of the financing. So again, you know, yeah. I mean, so let me go back to the.
Okay. Just thank you.
Yeah, so again, I'd be happy to answer any questions for the board. You know, again, this will get a lot of vehicles, a lot of fire rescue, sheriff's, county vehicles, and some other equipment caught up in.
Have the 10 buses in it also?
No buses in here. That's okay.
That was the one we already did.
The previous financing. And again, I think we got a great proposal at 1.37%.
Excellent. All righty. Are there any other questions? No other questions from the board? Hearing none, I will now open the public hearing. Anyone wish to address the board, please keep your comment, state your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak now? Anyone online, Ms. Harris?
Nobody's unmuting.
Nobody's waving at you. All righty. Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Are there any questions or comments from the board? Mr. O'Brien, have at it. You got to get that thing out of the way there, Mr. Dolan.
You can just minimize it.
Yeah. Oops. What happened?
There you go.
Yeah, just leave it at the bottom.
I'll move it.
And just put it near the bottom for right
now. Yeah, put it near the bottom and then you can switch up to the top.
There you go. I'll move it.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve that resolution of that? You mean, I move the Supervisors approve the resolution approving a plan of lease purchase financing with J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, N.A. in an amount not to exceed $5,231,500 with Schedule A description of property attached thereto for master lease purchase financing in the amount of $5,231,500. For the acquisition of certain assets, including athletic field lighting equipment, fire trucks and ambulances, public works equipment, and a storage facility for such equipment, and vehicles for use by county staff and the sheriff's office, and to pay the cost of issuance with the following terms. One, the term of the 2022 master lease purchase agreement shall be 10 years. Two, the interest rate for the master lease purchase agreement shall be fixed shall be a fixed rate of 1.37%. And all those related require lease purchase agreement financing documents, including, without limitation, lease purchase agreement together with all related documents, addenda, riders, and attachments, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the financing and related documents with such documents subject to approval as to form by the county attorney and the county bond council as more specifically set forth in the resolution.
Right. Does motions made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1. Thank you very much.
Thanks, y'all.
Yes, sir. Now we will move forward with the budget work session. 7 p.m. Mr. Dahl.
All right. The board's
oh, we need to extend the meeting.
Yeah, we don't need to extend the meeting. We need to extend my dinner.
We got you on speed dial.
Okay.
We'll buzz you like the collar on. All righty. Thank you, Payne. All righty, folks. Well, we do need to extend probably because, well, hopefully not. You're going to be done before 9, won't you?
Oh, I hope so.
You and me both.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
we all
see.
Yep. Alrighty, sir.
All right. So I've got two presentations. I've got one for my county administrator's proposal, and then we've got one for revenues expenditures, and we can go in deep with the weeds as we want. But let me just kind of blast on through. And like I said, I'm happy to answer questions.
This is one of those things where we're just kind of taking it in.
A little bit, yes. Yep. At this point. So again, just acknowledgments. Thanks to all the participation by constitutional officers, agency heads, directors, department heads. Special recognition to Ms. Tori Melton, management analyst, and Commissioner of Revenue, Mr. Sheridan, just for kind of helping to kind of get the information and put this budget proposal together. It was, like I said, being short of finance director, it was a little extra push this year, but we got it done. So again, just the budget development process, we carefully review revenue projections from all existing revenue sources, perform a detailed review of all of our expenditure budgets, go through, look at actuals, look at 4 or 5 years of actuals. We incorporate essential personnel requests to support Fluvanna's service expansion and technical needs. Definitely we want to support staff and with adequate compensation and benefits plan. Identify any potential funding shortfalls for further discussion during the process. Or, are there any service gaps or any services needed? And then kind of refine the future years, the out years planning. And again, the out years for 24 through 27, that's not officially approved. That's just kind of a look ahead to kind of see what potentially could come down the line. Budget pressures, again, new and expanding water and sewer infrastructure needs in our designated growth areas to support economic development. As we talked about a little bit earlier, it looks like with some of these infrastructure bills and through some of the proffers that we have, there may be some access to non-county funding sources to be able to fund some of those. There are certainly increased costs for public safety, sheriff's office, E911, and fire and rescue services. This is the second year that the board and that the E911 dispatch implemented the new state mandated emergency medical dispatch. That was a cost of around $300,000, and that was in the current fiscal year 22, and then we're finishing it up in fiscal year 23. Again, as we talked about, aging sheriff's office mm-hmm. patrol vehicles and fire and rescue apparatus, and again, aging facilities, public works, fleet, equipment, that require maintenance. Between the county and the schools, we have over 33 buildings with HVAC and over 300 vehicles, both county and schools. And there's certainly been an increased cost of goods and services over the last 12 months. The consumer price index has increased 7%. And again, we want to make sure that we're maintaining competitive salaries and benefits for county and school system staff. And this budget also, it's a pressure, but we have a high existing debt load, but our debt load, it's good in that we've got a lot of low debt and we've been able to accomplish a lot. And we'll have some charts later and I'll show you just kind of showing where we are currently with our debt load.
I hope they're inflation adjusted.
What's that?
I said, I hope they're inflation adjusted.
So this budget total is $96,290,691. The real estate tax rate is the same tax rate that we currently have based upon 88.4 cents. So it basically results in no tax increase for the average homeowner. In my budget proposal, there's no change to personal property tax, which remains at 435. No change to the business and public utility personal property tax, which remains at 290, and no change to the machinery and tools, which remains at $1.90. The budget from this year to last year is actually an overall decrease in overall total expenditures by $16.7 million, which is a 14.8% decrease from the FY22 amended budget. And I'll go a little bit more in detail because that's a big decrease, but there's certainly reason behind it. And my budget proposal is about a $2.9 million decrease than what was requested between all departments, constitutional offices, and CIP as well. So to talk a little bit about the $16.7 million decrease, obviously the biggest piece of that is, you know, last year the board approved $25 million in funding for CIP. Well, this year we're not doing $25 million. Well, I haven't proposed $25 million, so my proposed funding for CIP is roughly around $4 million. So obviously the funding has decreased substantially. Now, the one thing with that is CIP funding, whether it's fund balance or debt service, you know, if you take out debt, it certainly affects the tax rate and that we have to pay for debt service. But if we pay for it from fund balance, it's not affecting the tax rate. We also had a decrease in what we had budgeted for debt service payments from last year to this year by $554,000. Some of the reasons for that is last year when we budgeted for the debt service, we budgeted about $1.6 million for the new debt we were taking out for that $25 million. After we've kind of closed on some of the transactions, one, the BPSA one that we closed on in November, what we just closed on here this evening, and then what we were still kind of have earmarked coming up, we don't need as much in payments in these first couple years. Some of them we were able to do interest-only payments for the first couple years and then fully amortization going out for the remaining 8 years. And then some payments are not going to hit until next year as well. This budget does have a $1 million increase in local in tax and local operating revenue, and I'll go into that a little bit further in some further slides. Schools funding, not including the county fundings, increased $3.9 million. Social services revenue for the state and federal is about a $30,000 increase over last year, and a net increase in enterprise funds by about $100,000 over last year as well. And the chart down here, which was part of the budget proposal in the budget message, just kind of shows those changes in categories. Looking at expenditures, you know, certainly the big elephant in the room on my budget so far is we have not received the school's formal funding request at this point.
Actually not.
The schools are looking at their budget tonight. Tomorrow night. I think they moved the meetings to Thursday now.
Okay.
So one, we haven't received the school's request. So although my budget request, my budget proposal is on the same tax rate we have, I'm certain that the school's request is not going to be flat in what they're requesting from the county.
Well, we know the state will leave us hanging by giving a 5% raise, and they cover a third of it.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, the same thing happens with the county too, and that's something that the board's going to have to consider. So again, the school's full budget request will come forward to the board February 16th. So just kind of looking at some of the, and again, this is not an all-inclusive list. I mean, we're really highlighting some of the larger increases over last year, and again, the sheriff's office, you know, at about $120,000.
And again, what this increase over last year is, this isn't necessarily what the department requested. This is what I put in my proposal. The sheriff's office requested more, but I funded in my budget $120,000, which accounts for one new sheriff's deputy position. And then there's increases for needed equipment for that position, as well as operational increases for fuel supplies and vehicle maintenance. For E911, as we spoke about before, over last year, it's about a $220,000 increase. And again, about half of that, $110,000, is for the last two remaining new communication officer positions to finish implementing the state mandated emergency medical dispatch program. There's also some funds in there for increased costs for the E911 radio system maintenance services, as well as an E911 radio system core upgrade of $40,000. The one thing with the $40,000, that's only going to be a one-time cost in this fiscal year, and that'll drop off for next year. Under fire and rescue, again, there's about a $126,000 increase. About $38,000 of that is a 6% increase for the volunteer organizations that we support. Another $31,000 is for maintenance contracts for testing equipment, for apparatus pump testing, hose testing, cascade system testing, and MSA air pack hydro testing. So that'd be kind of a cooperative, overarching countywide contract. And then there was a lot of other increases for insurance, general liability, vehicles, accident, and line of duty insurances. So those are kind of the main pieces for the larger increases. Public Works also, in what I proposed, had an increase of about $72,000, about $30,000 for increased maintenance projects, and then about $35,000 for additional equipment and supplies. And then there's some remaining funds for repairs and maintenance for county vehicles. And then the Communion Center, about $120,000 increase over the last fiscal year. About 25 of it is to convert a convenience center part-time position, convenience center worker position that's from part-time, to convert it to full-time. There's also, we had to adjust the budget to reflect for actual costs for trash hauling services. And then there's $55,000 out there for associated costs for building and site improvements. And again, I didn't make mention of that, but those $55,000 for those costs, those will be a one-year, one-time cost too. So those things that I've identified as one-time costs, I actually, in my budget proposal, I funded those out of fund balance, since they're not gonna be a reoccurring thing in the budget. And then also under non-departmental, which is kind of the wedge category for any staff pay plans and health insurance, it's about a $484,000 total net increase. So for under employee compensation, as I said, we want to have competitive compensation to attract and retain high quality employees. In my budget proposal, it includes a 5% COLA for all county staff. That costs about $550,000. So about 1% equals $110,000. If the county funds that 5%, the state will then contribute up to 5% for state-supported constitutional officers' positions, as well as there's some funding also being provided for DSS staff as well. So again, if the county said we don't want to fund anything, well, the $154,000 goes away. That funding doesn't come to the county. We can't use it to offset from the compensation board. Their language is specific. If you're going to give a 5% across the board increase, they'll provide funding for the state-supported employees. And in addition, as we discussed with the board, we're going through a compensation study right now. We should have a draft one ready in March 2022. The tough thing with that is, I know there are probably some positions in our existing structure that are probably below the market. But until we get that draft study, I don't know what it's going to look like. And then there could be a tiered approach.
because I think some positions are going to need to be adjusted at some point. Virginia retirement system, actually for this fiscal year, in the Virginia retirement system, we get our employer rates on a biannual basis, so they're good for 2 years. So the VRS system, they had a stellar year for their investments. They usually plan for about 6.75% for return. They did, I think, over 27% this past year. So for our next 2 years, the VRS rate's going down 0.4%. We were hoping for more with them to do so fantastic in the rate of return. So that'll equate to a $35,000 reduction. And just for the board's reference, the chart here to the right just kind of shows what they've implemented over the past, you know, what's roughly about 10 years for COLA, and if there was any targeted raises, and if there was any type of bonuses or anything like that. But that was also in the board package. I'm sorry, not in the board package. It's in your budget package, and we'll be putting that budget package online too. Health insurance has also been a big driver every year. If you look back in here in 14, 15, and 16, we were with Anthem, the local choice, and you know, we had pretty consistent rates. Around 17, we moved to Cigna, and you know, we ended up moving from Anthem because Anthem said we were going to have about an 8% increase 1 year. It was around an 8% increase, and so at that time we left Anthem to go and put out an RFP for new insurance carriers, and we ended up going with Cigna, and you know, the rates were good, but then you can see here from the chart, you know, we were having double digit increases in our rates when we moved to Cigna. We, in fiscal year 21, we decided to put a proposal back out to Anthem, the local choice, and our rates decreased about 14%, which was a huge savings for fiscal year 21.
It was bigger than that because Cigna had told us they were going up 21%.
Yeah, they were going up 21%. We ended up going down 14% going through Anthem, the local choice. And again, so last fiscal year, we're at about 8.4%. And just kind of in insurance, you know, some of the talk is at 8%. In my budget, I have a 6%, 6.5% increase in there, which equates to $84,000. I think we're going to need to, as I talked to the board before, some of our other plans, we're going to need to look at and tweak them a little bit. We had to, when we did the conversion from Cigna to Anthem, we had to make some changes so employees were not, were held a little more harmless in some of their rates. We're going to probably need to adjust them a little bit, and we're going to have to see it. Like I said, I don't know where our rates are going to come in at with Anthem. We should have a proposal, I'm hoping, here by the next middle of the month, hopefully 2 to 3 weeks. And then, so again, I've got 6.5% in my budget. The chart to the right looks at what positions were requested this year. So the ones up top in the green were the ones that were included in my budget proposal, and the ones in the bottom were the positions that were not included in my budget proposal. So again, the ones that were included were the two communications officers that I talked about, the sheriff's deputy, converting a human resource position, one human resource part-time position to a full-time position, and the convenience center worker from a part-time to a full-time position. The positions that were not funded in my budget proposal, there was a request for a carpenter, a request for a fleet apprentice, one full-time sheriff's deputy, and one part-time sheriff's deputy. And again, you know, for our CIP, you know, generally most years we fund the CIP out of fund balance, since it's kind of a one-time cost. You know, but again, as we talked about, we can't continue to defer essential maintenance and facilities and equipment before they go past their useful life. And again, I didn't propose any debt service financing in this budget for the CIP projects that were recommended or proposed by me.
And if you look in this chart, which probably is a little difficult, but again, this is also in my county administrator's budget message that'll be included in the package online. It shows what requests were included in my budget proposal and which ones were not. So I'm not gonna go through every single one line by line unless the board wants me to, but again, so I think the total for all CIP projects was about $6.6 million. In my budget proposal, there's about $4.3 million funded. And then, you know, as we go forward, there'll be more chances to discuss with department heads and agencies, you know, the requests and what was funded and what wasn't funded. Looking at fund balance, again, we've got a conservative fund balance policy that maintains unassigned restricted fund balance at 12% of general fund revenues and school revenues. So as of June 30th, our unassigned restricted fund balance basically means that's the money we can't touch. It's there for an ultra emergency. That's about $10 million. And then what we have on top of that is about $13.8 million. And those funds can be used for what the board chooses. You know, we generally use unassigned fund balance, those dollars for CIP projects over the years. So again, we've got $13.8 here as unrestricted, and I've, in my total budget request, there's about $5 million in fund balance use. So that would take the 13.8 down to about 8.8 roughly. And just looking at some economic factors, you know, annual unemployment rate, and again, these are looking at here, this is through 2020. Again, we usually look at the annual unemployment rate data. The one thing we know for certain, and this is kind of skewed because when you pull the monthly data, currently right now for Fluvanna, the most recent data that's available, we're at 2.3% for Fluvanna for our unemployment rate. So we're back to where we were, right where we were pre-pandemic for our unemployment rate. So we've got a low unemployment rate, you know, kind of the lowest it was previously. For our sales tax, you know, we've had fantastic sales tax increases, specifically over the last couple of years. From 2019 to 2020, we increased the revenue from our sales tax almost over 18%. The big piece of that is now there is some new legislation proposed from the Commonwealth or passed from the Commonwealth that online retailers like Amazon and those now pay into the sales tax that we get. And so Fluvanna reaps the benefit of that. And certainly during the pandemic, people were at home, people were shopping, having boxes show up at their front door. So a lot of people were shopping and we saw the benefit of that.
They still are.
Yes. I know at my house too.
Yeah, I walked by the door today with a box.
And so again, too, you know, the sales tax increase from online retailers now having to pay into the sales tax, plus just in Fluvanna alone, people were more local. And so we saw more from there.
And the DMV increased.
Yeah. Population growth, we talked about this. 2000 to 2010, we increased 28%. From 2010 to 2020 in the last census, we increased 6.1%. So our population growth hasn't been as much. Looking at building permits, this kind of just shows you total building permits. Total building permits is everything, including new houses, additions.
I ask one thing about the population.
Yeah.
2020, those numbers, does that include the prison?
Yes. Okay. Yep, 27,249 includes the prison.
21 will be there.
Yeah, because 25,691 includes the prison as well. In our census numbers, we include the prison, but for redistricting and for that, we extract.
What's
the
prison population? 1,086.
Yeah.
1,086, I think is what it was, or 1,084.
It does kind of skew the number a little bit, right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, if you look at apples, the 25,691 included the prison population, the 27,249 includes the prison population.
So it's not a big difference from there.
Yeah. Looking at, again,
total, the 28% was skewed, though, with it.
Sure. Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's
well, less so. I mean,
5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, but 6% on 25. I mean, in other words, if you take the 25,691, you go to 27,249, you're looking at, what, 1,500 roughly, a little bit more than 1,700? But if you really look at what the growth was, it wasn't 1,700, it was 700.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. Right. Yeah.
I mean, real growth.
But no, but what he was saying was the prison was included in 2010.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying that the prison population is not a
correct. Population that, take that out of the equation.
This is just straight census data.
No, I get that. Yeah. I get that.
So I mean, the 2000 increase is 2000 increase.
Yeah. Right. I'm looking at building permits. You know, from 2018 to 2019, we had a huge jump in building permits. You know, we have jumped about 50% that year. And we've been staying pretty consistent for total building permits. Remember, that's new homes. Someone wants to add a pool. Someone wants to put on the deck, whatever. You know, we've been right around the low 600s. But when you look at permits for new home construction, again, we had a slight decrease from, let's call it flat. 2018 to 2019 was about flat. But from 2019 to 2020, we jumped 60%. And we were about consistent at that number.
What was new home construction in the early 20s, 2012, 2007?
I'm sure I could get that from the building inspection. I just don't have that data.
Pretty much, I think. I don't think it was over 600. I don't think it was.
Yeah, I seem to have a number of like 600 in my head.
You know, back in...
No, I'm talking about new home. I'm not talking about building permits.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, probably for new homes, probably back when the lake was building out, you know, kind of in the end years. And plus, just around the county.
When we were the third fastest growing county in the state.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some pretty substantial. And like I said, Andy Wills could probably give me that information.
I like that sheet when we used to have that in the back of our book.
Yeah, we've got some supplemental sheets we still have to provide for your budget books and the building inspections report too is always in the board pack. Well, it's generally in most, I think, in the board package once per month. So, and then just some new revenue sources. Again, you know, the board looked at meals tax previously. There was some legislation back in July 2021 that. The board tried to implement a meals tax, put it out for referendum. It failed. The legislation that passed in July 1, 2020 allowed localities the same local taxing authority that cities have. So localities that didn't do a referendum when this passed could instantly implement the meals tax. Because we had a referendum that failed, you have to wait 6 years to do it. So. For 2024, the board could implement a meals tax. A conservative estimate is if we did that, it would be $300,000 to $600,000. I will tell you that in the current General Assembly session, there is a ton of legislation out right now for changes to meals tax, transient occupancy tax, to the grocery tax, and you know. There's some things that are mentioning that the grocery tax may not have replacement dollars in some of the legislation, whereas if the grocery tax went, I think there was an estimate of counties in this area that would go down. Counties could lose anywhere between $700 to $7 million, and that, you know, in some of the localities. So there's been a lot of talk between the county administrators and VACO if the grocery tax does go in, request language that allows for replacement dollars that holds localities harmless so we don't take a big hit like that in one fiscal year. But again, and looking at the meals tax, there's been changes of that too, which is, you know, talks about limiting what you can do. So there's a lot of legislation out there that's yet to be determined, and we'll see how that all kind of shakes through. But again, from the budget calendar, you know, we're at February 2nd. The dates here in orange, those are school board only dates. So the school board, I need to change this. I think tomorrow is when the school board has their work session. February 9th, next week, the school board has their public hearing and budget adoption. And then also February 9th, constitutional officers brief, and then February 16th, the schools come to us, and you kind of have your joint school board and board of supervisors work session.
So they're probably going to be the 10th, if you said they're going to Thursday night.
Yes,
It'll be the 10th, yep. 3rd and the 10th.
Correct, yep, that was a change. The school board just approved changing the dates that they have their school board meetings. And again, that's just the calendar as we go. And again, we normally adopt the budget in mid-April, and we got some flexibility there, but that's generally when we've always adopted the budget. Looks for this one, we have adoption for April 20th. And, you know, again, we just want to do kind of a basic high-level overview today. If you have questions, if there's anything the board wants us to research, you know, if the board wants to go into the weeds, we can go into the whole budget document, but I wasn't planning on it, but I can certainly do that.
And then we need to do that tonight, because we're just getting it, let us chew on a little bit. But there's one question, and I'll ask. I just thought about this while you were talking about it. You came in and gave us your proposed tax rate,
mm-hmm.
and what the tax rate is. Could we get a comparison? Would it do any good to get a comparison of those where we started the last 6 years, 8 years, whatever?
What do you mean where we started?
What the proposed, like what the county administrator's proposed tax rate
what was. What was proposed and what ended?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we could get those just to look at them. Oh, yeah. Okay, you know, we were 91. The proposed was 93 or 89, you know, where we ended up.
Yeah.
What's that?
Assign a percentage to that, too.
Yeah, with the increase of the tax rate.
But then,
inflation adjusted.
Well, I mean, you know, whether we went up a penny, whether we went up 1.4, whether we went up 0.6, whatever it was.
You did a great job with your staff with this little introduction. It was beautifully written.
Good, thank you. I appreciate that.
As soon as I find mine, I'm going to read that. It's somewhere.
And so the next piece, I mean, we can certainly do that, come up with the chart showing you, you know, all those things.
Just look at it.
We already have it.
We have it out there. We can certainly... I'm just talking about
going back and comparing year to year.
Yeah, we can do that.
Not the end, but the beginning and the end.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, remember here, so again, as I said, the schools are going to come back with an ask.
Yeah, I talked to the superintendent.
I met with Dr. Gratz, superintendent, and Ms. Gillum, director of finance there, and you know, just some initial numbers. Because again, just like for the comp board and for DSS, and there's a 5% increase being recommended for those positions, same thing holds true for schools. They're trying to get schools' salaries up to, and there's in the schools' funding formula, there's a 5% increase for schools too. And so talking with the schools, roughly, to implement a 5%, just the true cost to implement a 5% is $1.6 million. That's a cost. And there's probably about a $700,000 offset in state funding that they would get, maybe $600,000 to $700,000 offset in state funding they would get. So to implement a 5% for the schools, it would roughly cost about $800,000. Now that doesn't include if there's going to be any new positions that they're requesting or any other increases. I'm expecting you'll see probably between $500,000 to $1 million as just kind of a big swap of a guess.
Oh yeah,
what they're asking for?
Probably.
I don't know. I'm not sure if they've asked for less than $1 million the last.
I don't think they have.
Or $750,000 might have been the low mark.
Yeah.
In the last 8 years since we've been on the board.
Yeah, last year maybe once the COVID. Yeah, generally, right.
Well, that's because they had so much money coming back.
$1.5 million to $1.5 million.
And again, we've been as low as 300 one time.
So for my budget proposal, so when you think about revenues, so we get revenues from the commissioner, taxable values, and then you have all the other revenues that are worked on through the finance department. You know, you're talking, you know, everything that is in the planning department, building inspections, you know, looking at trends for state sales tax, and all other state revenues. So you know, we've looked hard at those revenues that we've got some oversight on, and I don't see a whole lot of flexibility on increasing our revenues. You know, as we know, the commissioner of revenue, you know, as time goes on throughout the budget process, Mr. Sheridan, he's going to get more COs on properties. There'll be additional. There may be, I don't know for sure, but there may be some additional taxable values coming back into the county.
A huge number, but it'll be.
No, there'll probably be some. And I think the personal property, since we got it a little bit later, I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of changes to that. When we go into my finance director's presentation next, we'll go into a little more detail on the actual numbers and stuff, and we can get as eye-blinding deep in the weeds as we want, or my hope is we'll just kind of breeze on through. But I'm happy to answer questions. So is, besides what the board asked for about the kind of looking at those tax rates, what was originally proposed versus where we ended up in the increases, is there anything else that the board wants me to take a look at?
Well, I thought it was interesting, this is just a comment, that since 2013 until 2022, we didn't give the employees much of a raise, anywhere between 1 and 3%.
Yep.
So last year we gave them the first substantial income raise, and inflation went up 7%.
Yep.
So flat.
Yep.
They can't buy more than they could in the previous 10 years.
Yeah, and like I said, the board was very appreciated by staff in the last, you know, year. So, you know, the bonuses and the increases, and again, you know, inflation previously wasn't as high as that.
Right.
But again, you know, I think when we look at our neighbors and some of the positions we're trying to hire, as we get the compensation study back, you're going to see, and I don't know this for sure, but there's positions, just as I've been doing. Again, I've been short of finance director for going on close to 10, 11 months now. So we know that there's positions that are probably not meeting the market salary that it should be at. So Our report for the comp study will tell us, you know, where we are, what positions we're under, what positions we're right on par with, and which ones maybe we're over on. Maybe we're paying higher than the market is. So
how long will it take to get that study?
We should have a good draft by March.
Okay.
Yeah. So we can take a look at that as well. And so if there are some positions that are way off the mark, you know, I would certainly want to see what that report comes back.
I can tell you right now, one of the things I'm going to talk about tomorrow, I'm going to go down there. But the governor, when he came in, said we want to make significant enhancements to teacher pay.
Yeah.
Well, they can't just drop the ball on us. They got to pick up better than what they've been doing. The SOQ position thing has got to change.
Well, there now is a bill. Would not going to affect us, but they're going to require, if the bill passes, an SRO officer in every public school. It's not going to affect us because we have one in schools already.
No, we don't have one in every school. No. We don't have one in two little ones.
It will affect us.
It will affect us.
And also, too, you know, there's something that's out there called the SOQ cap, which Mr. Sheridan was talking about, you know, could potentially raise those positions that fall underneath the cap.
Until they do that,
that would help us out from additional state funding.
I mean, you just talked about it. 1.6 million and 700,000 of it will be covered by the state.
Yeah.
And we get to cover the other 60%, 65%.
Well, and again, for the county, you know, it's the same thing. 5%
half
million, and we get.
Is it 20 deputies? At
about 30% total funding to offset
that the state allocates funding for.
On the SRO one, I think there's $23 million attached to that.
Well, I'm talking about the state-funded deputies. How many of your deputies, if we get a state raise, then
we have 23.
We should increase by our population for every 1,500. I think they're talking about that to level that, because a lot of places aren't up to one deputy per 1,500.
But
that would increase our comp board. Now, Gabe, remember y'all gave us one last year.
Right, I'm talking about the comp board. How many of them are comp from
23
of 37.
Yep.
Right. That's what I was getting at. 23, only 23 of 37. So if you get comp board raises, we got to come up with the raises for the other 14, or just say, sorry, tough luck, Charlie.
Yeah, that means you have 23 deputies that are comp board funded. If you just wanted to fund what we get funding for, funding just the raises for those, I think that would be a bad precedent.
I think Central Elementary gets funded for one aide.
Yeah.
It's either one or three. I can't remember which one. It's either one aide or three aides in a building with the most students that we've got in a building.
Yeah.
In 6 grade levels. Or, I'm sorry, 4 grade levels. Yeah.
So any question?
On the grocery tax, if they do affect that, did I understand that you were saying that I missed a part of other funding or replacing the funding?
Yeah, so again, there's talk about the grocery tax being implemented, and if it's passed, it would go into effect for July 1 of 20. There's been a couple different looks at July.
Not implemented.
What's that?
Eliminated.
I'm sorry, eliminated.
The elimination, implementation.
The implementation of the elimination, or whatever.
Well, and there's another one that I want to talk to them down there about. You said because we did a referendum, and then 6 months later, they opened it up to everybody, we got to wait 6 years?
Yeah, well again, for next budget year, 2024, if nothing changes with the legislation, we could implement a meals tax without a referendum.
Okay.
But if some of the new legislation that's coming out is going back to talking about needing a referendum, or there's caps right now as it is for meals tax, since counties have the same taxing authority as cities, we could tax up to 6% for meals tax. Some of the new legislation that comes out, I think if you go up to 2%, you don't need a referendum, but if you go above 2%, 2 to 4%, you would have to put it out for a referendum, and I think the cap is at 4% is what they would allow for meals tax with this. And there's also some legislation, the same thing that talks about transient occupancy tax too, which we don't have any hotels here, so necessarily, I mean, I guess
bed and breakfast.
Yeah, bed and breakfasts or maybe Airbnbs that would apply towards, but so there's just a lot of legislation out that could have some effects on localities, and VACO's been, you know, we're getting emails every day of, you know, reach out to your legislators, and I've probably sent more emails to legislators this year than I've had previously, just because there's so many.
But to answer your question, right now, it's a discussion at the state legislature as to whether or not they're going to replace that income.
Yeah.
You know, you eliminate the tax, that's great, but that tax affects locality, so if they don't replace it, then it affects our budget.
Well, yeah, and basically what happens is, okay, so you're trying to... Yeah, without getting into the weeds of it, so you're replacing, you're taking away a tax that helps the community, and oh, by the way, if we want to stay at the same level service for that revenue, let me just use the bottom number. Say we get shorted $700,000. Well, where are we going to come up with that $700,000? The only way we come up with $700,000 is to cut something, $700,000 elsewhere, expenses, or we're going to have to increase the tax rate, which goes back to the people that are paying the grocery tax. So there's language for a one-time, I think it's for a kind of an ongoing consistent revenue replacement to hold localities harmless up front, because the state does have this budget year and next, they have a tremendous surplus in the state budget money right now. And it's probably going to be pretty astronomical over the next couple of years, is what projections are from some of the economists. So let me exit out of that, and I can go. I'm trying not be in the weeds here, and we'll try and go through. And I'm happy to answer questions, but this is more. This is what Kelly's going to love, because she loves numbers, right?
Love it.
So again, this is just kind of makes up our FY22 budget, and I'm not going to go too much, but just looking at revenues, property taxes make up about 40% of our revenues. State funding makes up about the other 38%. Other local, which is local revenues, makes up about 11%. And when you look at total expenditures in my proposed budget, again, all this is based on my proposed budget. School operation takes up about 53% of the total budget. And then, you know, general government is about, you know, roughly just under 30%.
And then our debt service makes up about, between county and schools, makes up about 11%. Let me just hide some stuff here.
I got a quick question.
Yes.
How much do we pay each year in debt service?
Right now, $10 million. Okay. $10 million a year in debt service. This is just kind of looking at general fund summaries of what we actually did in fiscal year 21, what we had budgeted this year, and what my budget proposal is including. So in my budget proposal, I'm showing about $1 million extra based upon the flat tax rate of additional revenue this fiscal year. And about half a million of it's coming from taxes, basically real estate, and I think it's about two low twos for real estate and probably about low threes for personal property tax. Other local taxes were up about 380. Again, the board implemented cigarette tax, so cigarette taxes in there. I budgeted 200,000 for that, and then I budgeted some extra for sales tax because I know our sales tax is gonna potentially be up as well. And so again, for general fund revenues, we're up over $1 million over last year. Just looking at our top four local revenue sources: real estate, personal property, public service, and local sales tax. Again, just kind of shows you where we go year by year. And again, if you look at the sales tax, and again, this is actual, and so what I've seen for actual for 2021 made me want to increase what I'm budgeting for 2023. And then just all the others are based upon taxable values. There's not a whole lot of trends or guesswork in that. It's basically what the commissioner has on the books, and that's what we use. Our Commonwealth of Virginia revenues we get PPTRA, Personal Property Tax Relief Act, which was, I think that was put in place back in early to mid-2000s. Again, we get about $2.1 million from the Comp Board, under $2 million from CSA, $700,000 from Social Services, and then everything else equates to about $600,000. And without getting, just kind of looking at this is just kind of showing you a breakdown of how we get to the revenue numbers for real estate tax. And I've got a couple slides that will show you per penny for and per nickel for real estate and personal property. But again, we've got real estate residential, real estate commercial.
What would non-taxable real estate value be?
That would be like probably...
County land, FUMA,
and churches and other
county land.
Yes, correct. Yep. And then again, under residential, the commissioner has programs for land use, conservation easements, open space, tax relief for elderly and veterans. And so then that kind of gets you down to a revised taxable value. And then when you divide those numbers times my proposed tax rate, you get a revenue. And then again, we don't collect 100% every year. We usually look at what we see as being the percentage that we're going to collect. And for real estate, it's been around 97.5%. And so then that's where we come up with our revenue numbers for real estate.
Any idea how we do compared to other counties as far as the percentage of that?
I don't. I can find out to see if. So this is a real estate tax comparison chart going back for the past 10 years. And again, the red means you're the lowest in that year, and the green, you're the highest. A couple caveats with this when you're looking at these. So Buckingham is the lowest because they don't have land use. So I don't know what their land use would be, but they don't give breaks for ag property, forestal property, or anything else. When you're looking at Goochland here and you're looking at their tax rate of 53 cents, that's on the majority of the county. But if you're in the Tuckahoe Creek Water District, you've got another 30 some cents on top of that. So you're at,
So Goochland, if you live in those areas that have the water...
East of the town of Goochland, I think.
Correct, yeah. It's a special tax.
It's a courthouse. The courthouse road, or the one that comes out right there to the food line, Mount Road East.
Yeah.
You pay extra 39 cents for water.
Yeah, between 21 and 22, there was only one locality that, well, besides us, we lowered our tax rate because we had a reassessment. Cumberland County lowered their tax rate, and everyone else kept their tax rate the same. And I'm not sure what their schedule is for reassessments or anything like that. The one thing is Louisa. You know, Louisa has a nuclear power plant, and they get a good chunk of money from that.
Nelson County has 151.
Yes. And, you know, our tax rate's not getting too far behind where Albemarle County is right now, too. I mean, they're at...
Charlottesville, I heard, was going to... First of all, I think they had a 10% increase in real estate, and
yep.
they're talking about 8-cent increase in taxes. I think.
Yep.
8-cent increase. Yep. So double whammy.
Yeah.
Like, what did you say about Nelson?
They have 151 corridor.
They just have that tourist industry that they... Every weekend, I mean,
they have Wintergreen too.
And yeah. well, and Wintergreen,
a lot of non-resident yeah. people who are paying taxes. So,
again, Fluvanna, we don't have meals tax, we don't have transient occupancy, we don't have BPOL. So there's lots of other taxes that localities, most every other locality has that we don't that they can tap into.
And we have a spreadsheet that shows all that
yep.
too, so that you can compare.
Yep.
So
looking at the per penny calculation, when you take into account the revenues from real estate, residential, commercial, public utilities, mobile homes, our per penny, and remember this changes, if our values change, the per penny is going to change slightly, but you know, you were roughly, and that's factoring in some of the collection rates, we're at about $326,000 as a penny. So as you're thinking about what comes forward from the schools, from a request, that's kind of your off-the-cuff number for calculating what a penny's worth. Any questions on that, or?
$1 million is roughly 3 pennies in back, 3.1 penny.
And again, this is kind of shows what our tax rate history has been and what we've budgeted for collection rates. In addition, we also get delinquent taxes in every year too, and it's kind of hard to budget for that, but you can see for real estate, we're pretty solid, right around $700,000 every year that we get in taxes from prior years that were not collected. And again, that kind of falls into a part of this percentage in this year and then some of the previous years as well. And we can collect delinquent real estate taxes for up to 20 years.
Does a delinquency reflect any revenues collected when the property is sold?
Probably, yeah. That's probably factored into it because, I mean, if a property...
I mean, I'm just wondering if that's part of the collection.
Yeah, because that would probably be a better question for the treasurer when she's here next week. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but that's probably a good question to ask her.
Can you get, like, some localities for us to compare to compare, if you go to the slide before this one, where it showed the... So commercial real estate, $1,167,000, residential, $27 million. How do we compare to, Louise's, they got the power plant. But, you know, you hear so much about getting, well, we need more business to subsidize the rooftops. Then you hear, well, more business you get, the more people you get because you got retail and more quality, you know, services and so on. I just wonder percentage-wise, how we're comparing to other municipalities. I'm not sure who you'd pick the
community. Well, I mean, I can, and I don't have hard data in front of me, but I know for certain that our commercial versus residential mix is not where it needs to be. I mean, I can get that though.
I feel like we should just take some municipalities yeah. to.
Well, there's two parts to that. One is that the level of commercial in terms of the relationship of real estate taxes. Talk about real estate taxes. You're speaking about real estate taxes in both cases.
Yeah.
But what other counties often have is the real estate collection of BPOL taxes as well, too,
yeah.
which change that level, amount of commercial real estate you have versus regular real estate, that's a reflection of how
much business you have. Yeah, so maybe it's not even worth going through, because if you don't dig deeper into what other taxes and so on they have.
But we do have a spreadsheet that basically shows each county which taxes they do impose, what the percentage of those taxes are.
Yeah, we've got a giant spreadsheet, and we need to update it. I mean, it basically shows... It shows counties that are near us, all of our kind of surrounding TJPDC counties and stuff like that, and kind of what different taxes, revenues they get, what they collect. And then also there's some columns that show counties that are not in this area, but counties that are of similar population and what type of revenues and different taxes they have. And like I said,
since I've been here, but we've only been able to assess two essentially new taxes. Cost recovery and not a cigarette.
Yeah, we've implemented cost recovery, which we get roughly about $700,000 a year.
Which in theory isn't truly a tax.
No.
Because they're collecting it from their insurance company.
Yes. Right?
And it pays for the...
Yes, it offsets the service.
It basically launches hands.
We implemented a trailer license fee a couple of years ago, which gives us about... little under $100,000 in revenue, and then the board just implemented the cigarette tax, and again that just became effective January 1st, and so I've budgeted on the low to mid range of $200,000, but it's the estimates are going to be anywhere between $190,000 to $280,000.
I forgot about the term.
You see our 326. One of my friends, Vaco, was sitting beside me. We were on their education committee. I said, well. It was Loudon, I think. He's either Loudon or Fairfax.
That's a penny worth $2 million?
No, keep on trucking.
Oh, really?
It was like $12 million. Yeah. If you raise it a penny, it goes up to either 12 or 21 because of population.
Yeah, so
thank you.
Yep, no problem. And like I said, talk about this slide here. Again, this just kind of shows the personal property tax going back to the same thing, where we started out with taxable values, what our taxable real revenue is, based upon collection rates and what have you.
And the business personal property right there, that's a whole nother ball of wax, because the formula used by each county is different.
Yeah.
The 290 really doesn't show you the whole picture.
Yeah, I've got a couple of charts for those comparisons too. Again, so here's a personal property tax rate comparison. Again, red's the lowest, green's the highest, and we're kind of, a little bit right in the middle of the mix there at 435. The average is 402. Again, if you knock out the high and low, we're probably right in the middle there for everyone else, for just basic personal property, not business or anything like that.
It's interesting that each of those has maintained their position for all those years.
Yep. Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised if that changes.
Hey, that one, when we went from 15 to 35, that was one of our 5-0 votes.
Yeah.
Because that was where we made the compromise you had talked about.
And then as Mr. Sheridan talked about, the business personal property, this is one you can't just look at the tax rate, because there are, behind every locality, they do things so entirely different. Some localities, like us, I think we depreciate our I think it's 20% year one.
And but at 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. After 10 years, we don't tax the business personal property anymore. Where some localities will have more of a tiered approach, where maybe year one, they depreciate at 80%, then 60%, then 40%. And then for the life of it,
they maintain it
at 20%. So the tax rate is great, and you can say, so it's such and so is lower. I did a comparison chart a few years ago, I think comparing us and Louisa and maybe another, looking at what our value is, and when you kind of factor in some of the depreciation schedules, we were right in line with our higher tax rate compared to some of the others. And again, we're not the highest one either.
And I think when you did that was before we dropped it to 290.
That's correct.
It may have been.
I think that's back when we were like $4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, from a business standpoint, for someone to come here with business personal
with
property.
With a lot of equipment, we're a great place to be.
We're a great place to be. I mean, with our 20% depreciation day one, and it's only
tax for 10 years of its
life. How many trucks do you have that might run for more than 10 years?
Well,
but heavy equipment operators might have a piece of heavy equipment that will operate for 20 years.
So our personal property nickel calculation, again, I'm not going to go through all the details, but again, our per nickel amounts are right around 133 per nickel, 133,000 per nickel. And again, looking at personal property, same chart as before, showing our tax rates, we've increased our collection rate, our budget collection rate, and this kind of shows you where we've been for delinquent collections every year. This one can be a little difficult sometimes because you can see this one year.
That one year was crazy.
We had that anomaly of 200,000. So I've been budgeting around 550 to 575. If you know, we were to have a $200,000 year, I mean, we're conservative. We're conservative, and we usually have surplus in budgets that, you know, vacancies and stuff like that that'll cover certain things like that. But
what do you credit the collection rate to consistently getting better to?
I don't know. Working before, and again, we've looked at this for years, working with the treasurer and just kind of looking at where the revenues were. It was just a matter of seeing what we actually got in that year and just feeling comfortable increasing it a little bit. So I don't think there's no economic reason per se, just kind of looking at what we're getting and what we see, what we think is a better way to budget and increase the collection percentage a little higher, which equates to more revenue.
To actually reflect that correctly, you have to have the number of the total amount of personal property being taxed, which obviously would increase, you know, every year just by population growth or by that cost increase of personal property.
Again, this is Public Service Corporation, and our Public Service Corporation revenue has been going down a little bit, and it's going to go down because the Dominion one, we're going to get increases because all the upgrades in utility infrastructure, fiber infrastructure, that's going to be taxed as per a Public Service Corporation. But also, we're going to lose also because the Dominion BREMO plant is. That revenue is going away since they mothballed the plant and the revenue for that property. They're probably going to demolish the property at some point. There's some legislation. We are actually going to lose what we're getting from the revenue from that facility.
But there's another factor that goes into this when the reassessments go in. Reassessments go in, then we get 100% of it. But when we don't reassess, it kind of drops.
The best is to always be around 100% based upon assessments. And Mel could talk about this a lot better. He's a little more familiar with it, but it has to do with when we do reassessments and kind of how our assessments compare versus the public service. Like I said, again, probably another good question to ask Mel next week.
Where one year they might pay us 94% of what
they're
and another time they'll pay us 100%.
Well, the 92.5, that's what we kind of budget as a percent, as kind of looking, because we're not sure what it's going to be. But again, we're budgeting for taxable values right now, and that those taxable values equate to a revenue. But the commissioner's office doesn't get the actual taxable values for those state corporations until September.
And I was going to say that's after.
Yeah, we're 4 months into the budget year already. So, and again, this just kind of shows operating budget and CIP in the millions. So again, you know, 2022 was certainly a big anomaly because the board approved $25 million in total funding, and the blue line just represents kind of the school's budget. And again, in 2022, that's what it is. It doesn't include my proposed budget right now. Again, here's general fund expenditure summary. You know, we kind of already talked about that. What functions, you know, there's about 10 departments that fall under general government, four that fall under judicial admin, I think about 7 or 8 that fall under public safety. So again, overall, all those areas, we're looking at about a $465,000 increase. And that's just kind of shows school expenditures. And again, my co-ed propose is a little skewed because I don't really know when they come back with a proposal where they're going to put the dollars in certain categories, because they budget categories based on instruction, admin, attendance, health, pupil transportation, operations and maintenance, and technology. So those previous years, those were kind of real numbers, but my current 23 year, the total amount is correct, but where those classifications are is not accurate. And then just a quick debt overview. So remember these
debt. No, is the actual budget to you, because you have the adopted and they haven't given us the numbers back.
What's that?
In the previous slide. The 22 adopted budget isn't the actual, because they haven't given.
Correct, because we don't have the end of the year. I mean, the actuals, this is where they really ended up with their actual expenditures. I mean, again, you know, let's think about fiscal year 21. We funded them for X, and they ended up being about $1 million less than, their budget came in $1 million less than what it was. So
we think they're going to go from 44 million or 45 million to 51?
Well, yes. In part of the state funding, they were getting a base state funding, again, includes 5% funding for teachers, but in there, there's a $2 million amount for school construction. So it skews their state number a little bit, and that $2 million can only be used for HVAC improvements. Again, there's some...
Anything related to COVID?
Well, not necessarily COVID. It's actually due to modernizing school facilities that are outdated and trying to get school facilities more in the 21st century and getting the proper improvements for, you know, HVAC, lighting, just a lot of things. So school construction funds, the $2 million that they get, can be utilized for that. And that's kind of new to this year. That hasn't been in the budget years previously. So again, anything school related, I'm sure that they'll be happy to get in the weeds on kind of what their budget entails when they come here on the 16th. Looking at debt, again, this is just debt as of June 30th. We haven't had a chance to add. So remember, back in November, the board approved $3.5 million debt funding for the schools for their HVAC project and school buses. And then tonight, the board just approved $5.2 million. So again, right now, we're at about right at $80 million is what our debt level is. And you know, you can add another, kind of going out, you can add another $8.8 million on top of that.
Is any of our $25 million in there?
Nothing is in this chart with that.
So,
because again, this is
$25 million.
This is as of June 30th. So right here off the top, the board's already approved in this fiscal year $8.8 million. So that's, you know, these are...
But the money we approved today is part of the $25 million.
Yes, it is.
That's what I'm saying, but we can raise that $25 million.
Yeah, I mean...
Yes, I mean, let's just say you take $80 million right now and you raise it $25 million, because that's what the board approved, we're going to be up here up in the $105 million.
Except we'll pay down $10 million this year, so we'll be at $95
million. And that's the next chart will show you...
Been there, done that.
Right, exactly.
Wasn't it like 112 the highest we've been or something like that?
Yeah. So this kind of just looks at our annual debt service level, and again, this doesn't include the projects that the board approved debt service on this year. Again, we just approved something tonight. Now the dollar amounts for whatever it is are included in my budget. I included the debt service amount in my budget for what was approved tonight and what was approved in...
Is that part of the fund balance that you said you were going to
use? Yes. Okay. Yep. And again, you can see here in fiscal year 2024, we got the radio project about $1.2 million falling off, and that's...
And then there's another $300,000 along with it.
Yeah, we had about
1.5, I think. Somewhere.
Yeah, and you can see here, I mean, going out to 27 to 28, you know, we've got some drop-offs happening in our annual debt.
Yeah, so I think the 1.5 is in the first 3 years, because we talked about at the end of that 3 years, we'll come out ahead with our 25.
Yeah, million. We're going to be about level in kind of where our debt service is.
Well, what we did was we took out the loan, but we committed to, instead of raising the tax rate to help pay for the loan, to use part of the general fund in order to keep the rate level.
Right.
Two or 3 years.
Yep.
And then when that drop off happens, we start paying the full amount. And so it basically ends up being
net neutral.
It's a little bit better than neutral.
And if you factor in inflation, it's better than neutral.
Yeah. I think it's like 1.3, and we're going to get it off the books 1.5.
And so just kind of a breakout of total debt service. This is what's attributed to county projects, what's related to school debt service, and then what's attributed to enterprise funds, FUSD, sewer, and Zion's Crossroads. And enterprise funds are generally self-supporting, with the exception of Zion's Crossroads, since we don't have customers on the system yet, and we need to get the system finished.
Bingo.
And then,
so when you say debt, debt service non-enterprise, that's like the school building itself?
Like the high school, and anything that's not a utility. So
yeah. Enterprise, that's everything, us and schools.
Yeah, everything in enterprise are utility types of debt that's outstanding. Gotcha. Like I said, I think FUSD has about a $60,000 a year payment. So, sewer's got about 60.
So literally we can look at this and say, I know our tax rate's 88 cents, but 33 cents of it goes to paying off our debt service.
Yep. And then fund balance, I think this is kind of some of the last slides. Again, this is just a little recap again. $10 million, that's kind of there. We don't touch. The board can dip into it.
We can dip into it, but we want to keep it there.
But you've got to have a plan.
Right?
You've got to, if you dip it, well, again, first, the money you have is this $14 million. That's your first pot to dip into. Then you've got money that's already committed for existing CIP projects. And then let's just say this all goes away and catastrophe happens, you've got then this kind of reserved amount that you could dip into, but you've got to have a plan to get it back up to that level if you do dip into it. Since I've been here for 10 years, we haven't gotten close to needing to dip into that.
Yeah, so. we talked about it. I don't know if you...
We did talk about it.
We talked about it when they were talking about not funding the government and what would happen in terms of cash flow.
We figured out, we did some calculations to figure out how long our fund balance would enable us to operate without getting
money from the feds.
Yeah. And I think it came out to, I think it was like 10 months or something like that.
When was that?
2014, 15, 16, somewhere?
I think it was later, like 2016, 2017, yeah. I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's right.
The whole, we're not going to fund.
Yeah, it was the whole government shutdown. When schools, a lot of the schools funding and state funding would have really put a big, kind of a hurting on the county. So we had to kind of figure out, this is what we have and how long could we spread that out.
Roughly $3.3 million a month.
Yeah.
It was around the sequestration.
Yeah.
Yeah, change.
$3 million a month.
Right.
Yep. And again, this just kind of shows you, again, our total fund balance is $28 million, and that's just kind of the breakdown of how that comes out, and then what the board has approved this year out of fund balance. And so currently we've got that $13.8 million. And then let's just say my budget proposal were to go through, I've got about, I think it's 5.3.
I thought it was 4.3.
No, I've got CIP, we got debt service,
plus
there's a little bit for operational for those two things I noted that were one-time costs. And then this just shows fund balance history over time, over the past little over 10 years. But you can see our fund balance has been going up. A good piece of that is we've done better revenue-wise, and plus CARES funds has helped us offset some previous expenditures that offset.
And we also chose, because we could get such good rates of financing to do that rather than spend the cash.
Yep. That's it. I'd be happy to answer any questions aboard.
Any questions?
The fund balance number that we have projected there, does it include any sense of what we might get back from the schools yet?
This year, no.
Does not.
Nope. Doesn't project what we think we're going to do in this fiscal year.
Us either. Right.
What's that?
Us either. Neither the schools.
No.
That's this actual real deal. This is where we are today.
Gotcha.
I was just going to say, for the sake of anybody who happens to tonight be watching or watch it tomorrow throughout the next week, a lot of citizens don't know, and I think you alluded to it earlier, that
we've already seen this as a board. We've all reviewed most of this, and so I can just
not as a full board,
right. But we have each seen it.
Though. Yeah.
And I can just imagine a citizen going out there and sitting out there and going, they don't even want to ask about questions when they're spending that much money. We've already asked some general overview, 30,000 foot questions, and then of course you get into that. So I think it's good for citizens that don't already know that to know that.
I won't say anything about hour too long too. Instead of being an hour and 20 minutes, it was like 2 hours and 20 minutes. Yeah.
Well, and the thing of it is, I mean, you know, this is just kind of my initial proposal to the board.
And we've got 8 weeks to chew on this, and we're going to see each other every week if we need to see each other.
And there's
going to
be a lot of back and forth, or maybe there won't be a lot of back and forth.
Well, and some of us, this is our eighth budget season.
Ninth.
So. Yeah.
And Ms. Booker, we're not going to shit her second.
We've seen a lot of this stuff before. So.
Plus a little.
Yeah.
It is my second.
Yep.
So it's your second.
With 10 years in between the two. Under the curve, I'm working on it.
So again, I mean, once we get into the budget process, I mean, again, it's going to be, you know, in the work sessions, once we get down to, you know, going back and forth on where we are, it's going to be 100% interactive and cutting this, adding
and
this.
And we got to get the schools. That's the big elephant in the room. Until we get the schools, it's really, we can't sit down and say, okay, here's where we got to cut here, here's where we're at here.
Yeah, again, I didn't fund everyone's full request. I mean, just because, you know.
I noticed you cut down a $20,000 increase for the supervisors. That's teasing.
The supervisors got fully funded for their current salaries. There's no cuts.
No cuts, no raises. All right. Thank you very much. That is wonderful. And without any other questions, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Seeger, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned.